world gone insane. An upside-down civilization cannot be real. A world of madness and terror.
It's the Dana Gould Hour.
Today's show is brought to you by Harry's. Please visit harrys.com and use the promo code Dana to save $5 off your purchase. September. Apple blossom time. The temperatures are dipping down under the hundreds, and I start the long process of dragging my Halloween decorations out of the garage. I'm also traveling. If you live in Indianapolis, Indiana, I'll be performing at Morty's September 17th, 18th, and 19th. October will find me back in good old San Francisco at the Punchline on October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, and in Kirkland, Washington, just a stone's throw from Seattle, at Laughs Comedy Club on October 15th, 16th, and 17th. For details and ticket information, please check out the live performance page at danagould.com, assuming we fixed it. If not, go to my Facebook page or the bulletin board on the south wall of the Laurel Canyon Country Store. Just look for the abandoned Slurpee cup that's full of bees. My guest today, excellent comedians all, Matt McCarthy. Follow him at McCarthy Redhead, McCarthyRedhead. Eddie Pepitone, at Eddie Pepitone. April Richardson, at Apey, APEY. And the so fast it scares even me, Mike Lawrence. The Mike Lawrence, LAWRENCE. Okay. This show is stamped and sealed, and we're going to post it, and I'm going to start working on the Halloween episode, so I got to get the hell out of here. Later, Gator.
It's showtime.
My guest today here on a beautiful, sunny September afternoon that's just starting to dip below 90. I was up at 5:30.
Wow, you beat me by an hour, no, 2 hours and a half. Jesus, 5:30 is amazing.
I woke up bright and early, and there was a nice breeze. I went outside, and I would describe the air as having a chill in it.
Yes, and we have, amazing.
Yeah, and we have 4 more days of that before summer of 2016 starts.
I know. I'm the guy, by the way, who this is just unbelievable that I keep doing this. I look at the 5-day and the 10-day and just get depressed about, like, it's beautiful today. And I'll be like, yeah, but look at what's coming Wednesday.
Yeah.
And I start to go like, damn it, it's coming back.
Well, it's also there's the whole the concept of being a weatherman in Southern California.
Oh, it's hilarious. Come on. Yeah. You have nothing to contribute, sir.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me introduce my guests today are show regular national treasure. Nick, he is such a national treasure. Nicolas Cage should be looking for tattoos on his back for hidden treasure. Edward Pepitone.
Hello, everybody. Hello. It's beautiful today, but Thursday is looking hot.
Thursday's looking sweet. And first time on the show, but incredibly funny. He has a new show. If you live in Los Angeles, you can see his new monthly show, The Matt McComedy Show. He hosts the We Watch Wrestling podcast. Please welcome Matt McCarthy.
Thank you. It is a crisp September morn. There's a hint of 9/11 in the air.
Are you 9/11ing this year? We're going back to the Hamptons. September morn. Where is the Matt McComedy show taking place?
At Basic Flowers, downtown LA, conveniently located on Scenic Broadway.
Downtown L.A., I love because it's an apocalyptic wasteland.
It really is with interesting architecture. And if you live in L.A., you know, well, most of the architecture is just kind of boring, right? But you go downtown and all these amazing hotels like the Alexandria.
It's fascinating. It is like on an old Star Trek where they would land on a planet that had a culture but had been abandoned.
Yes.
That's right. What downtown L.A. is like. It's like this was once a thriving downtown, and now it has been taken over by gangs of miscreants.
Very flavorful people.
And fusion chefs. There's a lot of, like, you know, it's like that. It's kind of, you know, it's one of those places, though, where they're trying to spruce it up. And the people who move in downtown, they're doing that. They have that a Stockholm syndrome thing where they're like, oh, it's great down here.
Yeah.
And every time I go down there, I'm like, just duck into this building, sweetheart. That sweetheart is my wife, by the way. Just duck into this building. I think it's a bookstore.
We were,
the last bookstore is down
The last bookstore is the best bookstore in Los Angeles.
It's cool.
Downtown L.A. is a great example of a great symbol of Los Angeles. There's tons of great stuff, but you've got to sift.
Absolutely.
It's like panning for gold.
You got to work for it.
You got to work for it. You got to look for it. And there's just a lot of stuff like people were killed here in the 30s by gangs and last night by different gangs.
There's that haunted hotel where the girl got stuck inside the water tank. Do you remember
that? Is that Alexandria?
Is that the one?
I don't know about that one.
Oh, my God. There was footage of her. I forget where she was in from out of town from. Then there's the last known footage of her is from the camera in the elevator. And she's, like, acting, twisting her body and, like looks like she's hiding from something. And then the next thing, the water in the building, the people who live there, it's turning black. And they're like, there's something wrong with the water we've been bathing and drinking.
What year is this?
This is last year.
Oh, okay. So this,
no.
I thought this was like in the 40s.
No.
Yeah, so that sounded like a 40s.
See, the book, Haunted Hollywood, is on my desk over there.
Ooh. Must know about yesterday. Whenever I have a few hours to myself, for some reason, I always Google Albert Dekker.
Of course. Albert Dr. Cyclops Dekker.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he died one of the most... Do you know about his death?
No, I don't. Wasn't he
you're kidding.
Was he a famous orgy master?
Oh, boy.
He might have been, but he...
Or was that...
I'm surprised you don't know about his death.
Charles Lawton, perhaps.
Dekker must have fooled around a lot because he died. It was in Hollywood in a Normandy apartment on Normandy. And he was found, this is really sick, he was found kneeling, nude, noose around his neck.
Oh my God.
All this S&M stuff like belts, chains, written on him was suck. Cocksucker and something else that everybody's got that written on him. But I mean, I'm still found dead and they called it autoerotic asphyxiation. Right. He's the first one supposedly done it, but a lot of people think no. He was murdered by a jealous associate.
Yeah, I was going to say if that because
it was too much.
Yeah.
It's like Carradine.
He had hand.
Yeah, David Carradine.
No, this was way he had hand. I'm surprised you don't know about this one. Albert Dekker.
I kind of knew. I knew there's a lot of those old. I don't know if it's Lionel Atwell might have been the guy that was like a famous, the word was orgy master, that's what I want. I just want to, run it. Keep the trains running. Get it? Come on.
Now it took me a beat because I've never been, I don't get invited.
Come on, people.
Get invited to those things because of body mass index. They do a lot of body mass index work on those things.
I wonder if like when you did in the old days, you got invited to an orgy, RSVP, or if you get like a paperless post, I will attend.
We have a baby shower that weekend. We can't make it.
Honey, do you want to go to the orgy?
Derek is having a
gangbang. Do I want to go?
Is it Atwell or Dekker? You know Dekker was found dead kneeling in a tub with handcuffs, blah, 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 blah.
We have to have dinner with Lester and Christine, but then if we get out of there early, we can shoot down to the orgy.
Let's just show our faces.
Wait a minute. Before we commit to the orgy, is this Sunday the Pasadena swap meet?
Right, it's a very...
We got to get up very early.
It's a horny, practical couple. They're extremely practical. They check out charter schools for their kids, but they want to fuck like crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very grounded, and, but randy.
Yeah. There's a lot of out-of-work porn actresses that just need to have a lot of sex, and they have nothing to do, and I think they're going to be at the orgy tonight, but I have to get a new juicer.
It's the sex business. Business.
I always thought in porn movies, I think in porn movies they should show the two actors shopping for some of the equipment that they have to tie themselves up in or whatever. Just yeah. like some of the stuff.
There should – well, I said this on another podcast that there should be an app on your phone where you can – when you're watching porn, it will show you the little pop-ups of the actors' childhoods.
Oh, my God.
And that will reduce your enthusiasm.
Oh, man.
I have to look it up. I think it was Lionel Atwill who played the Viserion sheriff in Son of Frankenstein and is brilliantly parodied by Kenny Mars and Young Frankenstein with a wooden arm.
Oh, that was a parody of Atwell. I didn't know that. Yeah, I love Kenneth Mars. You call him Kenny.
Kenny Mars. like I know him. But I got to say, he was great. And one of those guys, and I'll correct it on the show if I'm wrong, because I don't want to just falsely accuse someone of being an orgy master.
Yeah, really?
But, or orgy cadet. whatever your level of, whatever your, you know, orgy, the chain of command.
Soldier.
And throwing an orgy.
An orgy corporal is. You don't want to fuck with that guy.
I just got promoted to fuck marshal. So, my guests today are comedian, author, actress, and hand model April Richardson.
Hi, this is the sound of my voice.
Also, comedian, author, actress, hand model Mike Lawrence.
Hi, this is the sound of my voice.
People really aren't going to confuse the two of you in this interview. So I had a weird thing today. My oldest child started junior high.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I drove her to her first day of seventh grade.
Private school, right?
Yeah,
I just wanted to make sure that you weren't at all relatable.
Not at all.
Good, good.
Two things happened. Sitting there watching her and go off into this new school, into 2 years of her life that I remember as being the worst two fucking years of my life.
And it's interesting that it's 2 years for me.
Junior high is awful. Was junior high a pleasant experience for either of you?
No.
Oh, here's the weird thing about me, though. I loved school. I loved high school, loved middle. No, but don't get it twisted. Like, I was not cool. It wasn't like, I was cool and I was running things. I just, like, didn't give a shit at all. I laughed my entire way through it. So it was just, I don't care.
How did you have that level of self-awareness? And I would rephrase that as confidence. That's what
I did have, like, a weird confidence.
Yeah. My daughter's worried that, like, her friends from her other school are gonna meet new friends, and she's not gonna be able to keep up. You know, just a very traditional fear. And I said, like, you know, the thing is, just relax and stay consistent and like yourself.
Yeah.
And the more you like yourself, people will find that attractive. But my first day of seventh grade, I threw up in a class.
No.
So I was just done.
Yeah.
I fully did that Eminem shit where I was like, I'm going to make fun of me before you even get a chance to anyway. So, like, I don't care. I was always a goof. So I just out-goofed everybody. And that was it.
Right.
I'm having fun.
Are you an only child?
See you later. Yeah.
And you had very good attentive parents?
Yeah.
I'm not ragging on you.
You uppity motherfuckers with your only child in your private school. Well, this poor Florida boy.
I was not an only child. I was the fifth of six. In fact, earlier this week, I called my parents and we talked on the phone for about 5 to 6 minutes about nothing before I finally gave up and said, it's my birthday today.
No!
And like, oh, happy birthday!
And I remembered your birthday and your parents didn't?
My parents did not, and they felt bad for 30 seconds, and then my mother went into a riveting 28-minute monologue about her knee.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, that happens in your 80s, I'm assuming.
Oh, well, yeah, sure, but even still.
Yeah. No, they could have called. They could have remembered that.
Right.
See, the whole thing of, like, I'm going to make fun of myself, like, better than you can or before you can, I think I had great bullies because they're like, no, but I did have my own angle. You know? Well, I wasn't even going to make fun of that, but now that it's added.
Yeah. You're not going to beat the shit out of yourself. We'll take care of that.
Well,
yeah.
I'm sure that, I mean, obviously that part's worse for dudes. I never got beat up or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was that great line in Seinfeld when they're talking about wedgies and they're like, Elaine's like, oh, boys are so cruel to each other. Well, you didn't have that happen? She's like, no, we just tease each other until someone developed an eating disorder. It's like the perfect.
Yeah. Well, I had four older brothers, so yeah, I was the recipient of a vast panoply of physical and psychological abuse.
Right.
Plus, I was a little fat kid with four older brothers that were all athletes. Looking back at my childhood objectively, I would have despised me if I were them.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because yeah. they were real bros. You know, all of my brothers, they were all really popular. My one brother was like the best athlete the school had ever had. And my other brother was like the biggest drug addict the school had ever had. It's like, whatever they did, they excelled.
See, that's what's so freeing about being an only child is I don't have either of those superlatives to live up to. So it didn't, there's no pressure.
Yeah.
I love that both your brothers played different roles in the after school special.
Exactly.
But were the two leads.
That's so fantastic.
Yeah, I had Kevin Dillon and Matt Dillon, both as brothers.
That's so great.
My brother was like really mean. I remember I went to summer camp with him because we were never at the same school, but we went to summer camp together.
Older, younger?
Yeah.
He's older. I tried to like glom onto him. And then one day at summer camp, he's like, this is my brother, Mike. He's really alone and has no friends.
No, that's how he introduced you.
Yeah. He tried to sell me off like an Indian mom. It was
that's so
brutal.
Terrible.
Yeah, no one bought me either. It was rough. And then, middle school was terrible. I got pulled out of my middle school in sixth grade because I got beat up so much.
Really?
Yeah. They had to put me in a different middle school. I got my ass kicked a few times.
Like hardcore, like, you shouldn't be getting beat up. Like, we had a guy like David Levison that would come up behind you and punch you in the back of the neck.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Or punch you in the kidneys. You'd get hit once, and you'd be fucked up for the day. Or did you get, like...
I got jumped for 33 cents. Three guys, like, grabbed me and then went through my pockets. And they first were jumping me to take my money. But then when they saw how little I had, they beat me up even
angry.
More.
Right, yeah.
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 Oh, my God.
So it was, like, a few times. And then my dad's finally like, we're pulling you out. What it was do you know what magnet schools are?
Yeah.
So magnet school is a school in a shitty neighborhood that they have, like, special programs to get kids who don't live in those neighborhoods to go to. So I was the only white kid and they beat the shit out of me.
You were the only white kid in the school?
One of the only ones, yeah.
That might have had something to do with it.
Yeah. There was like maybe 20 white kids. I was the least racist one where I had no
animus.
Avoidance. Like I was just like, I'm going to walk around and have fun because everybody's the same, you know?
Yeah.
I got my ass kicked.
That's amazing. Yeah. I know that where my kids go to school, like there is none of that anymore. One of my favorite videos on YouTube, I'm sure you've seen this, is there's a kid, he's a heavy kid, he's a big kid, and this little kid is up there punching him in the face, and his friends are like egging him on, and the kid's just taking it. And then finally he just grabs the kid, picks him up, and drops him on his back. Have you seen this?
Oh,
no.
Damn.
Oh, schlubby kid.
Yeah.
And I'm a sad sack.
How old are these kids?
They're like, you know, 12, 13.
Right.
And this big kid just like, you know what? I fucking had it.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. You shouldn't be happy that a kid. But like, that kid was a fucking asshole.
Yeah.
And he learned a lesson.
Exactly.
And next time he'll think twice.
I remember because I did get in like a decent amount of fights, and my whole strategy was you're gonna win, but I'm gonna make you fight for it. Like I would.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was like I would go for the balls.
But you're not like you're tall. You're not a small dude.
Yeah, but this was before puberty.
Oh, okay.
A lot of it, I'd bite.
Good for you.
I'd yell out, I have AIDS during the fight. That was like my go-to strategy.
Right.
It would have been if you had the presence of mind to go like, why are you breaking up with me after we blew each other? Like that would just ruin that kid for life.
It's funny because it's like I have all of these like trashy like stories from childhood that I can never share on stage because of how privileged the audiences are now. So they think,
yeah, I understand that.
They think that you're being offensive when you're like, this is just what happened. You know,
yeah,
like when I worked at McDonald's, you know, that I was there for 7.5 years. If I just tell you the stuff that happened, people will think that I'm going out of my way to be offensive. And it's like, no, this is literally just facts.
Again, I never did get any fights or anything like that. But my parents, like if I would come home and be like, oh, I got made fun of, whatever, my parents, especially my stepdad, they were always like, if anybody hits you and you don't hit them back, you're going to be in more trouble.
Yeah.
I mean,
we had that too. You had to fight back.
We will be so mad at you. And now today,
your parents would go to jail. If they said, you told them to hit back.
But you know what? The thing is, like, people will say how easier it is, like, and it isn't as violent, but the bullying that goes down now is way worse. Because at least back then, you know, once you left school, you were off
the
clock.
You were done, exactly.
Oh, yeah, now it's
like internet forever.
I remember I had a seventh birthday party where one kid came. I invited all these people, and that's tragic. It allowed me to be the comedian I am today.
Exactly,
so now
paid
okay
for itself.
That. But, like, imagine now there would be, like, a hashtag, not Mike's party, with all the kids, like,
completely.
Just hanging out.
Yes, it would destroy me.
Yes. Yeah, there's a whole other world
that
of
you would
psychotic.
Just see forever.
Yeah,
and it never ends. I mean, I don't think there were as many kid suicides back then as there are now, and that's, like, people will say, oh, well, it's because they're pussies. I'm like, no, it's because the bullies evolved.
Yeah. It's everything just gets heightened. When I was in junior high school, my school was too small for there to be too many different subgenres. Mm-hmm. You know, there's basically like the stoners and the jocks. Mm-hmm. And there was really no room for anybody else. And I wasn't a stoner, which, for whatever reason, in my school were called burnouts.
Sure.
That's more of a high school, less of a middle school thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true. I feel like in middle school, I don't know anybody who did any drugs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, junior high,
if you're doing drugs, you're just the coolest kid ever.
That's right.
It's high school when it starts taking its effect, and you're like, oh, some of these kids are fucked up.
Yeah, some of these kids aren't going to go very far. I just hung out with the jocks because I had no...
You had no choice.
I had no choice. It was that. And so I was just like the funny mascot. But how important was what you were into at the time? Like, I know you're super into
music. I'm into the exact same shit.
No, but that's the reason we're all at this table. Because
right.
You had a deep abiding passion. Mm-hmm. You had a deep abiding passion. I had a deep abiding passion. It's not what we chose to do for a living,
mm-hmm.
and you're still as unabashedly into it as you were at the time.
Yeah.
And yours, which is really surprising, is you collect anal sex toys, which I find interesting that you don't use them. My question, why anal? That's the great thing about America is that we invented anal beads. Somebody sat up in the middle of the night and said, I wish there was a necklace so big it felt great being yanked out of my butthole.
I remember that kind of porn was the first porn that I really got into because I was like...
Anal bead porn?
Well,
it starts with watching people start up lawnmowers.
But you know why? Because I was like, I don't think I could ever love the people that are into this. Like, I'm not looking for this in my own life.
Right.
But I kind of am interested. I don't think I could deal with the backstory that leads someone there.
Interesting choice of words.
Baby got backstory.
That was actually the original subtitle for Batman Begins.
Hey, I was watching a porn like a few weeks ago where a girl was getting fucked in the ass and she just goes, oh my gosh. And I'm like,
she said gosh?
Yeah. I was like, that's where it's clean.
She's a Christian. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Cheese and rice.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Oops a doodle.
Yeah.
Oh my lord.
Oh my gosh.
Is it intellectually consistent to love Andy Kaufman and not love Donald Trump? Because isn't Donald Trump basically finishing Andy Kaufman's career right now? I mean, Donald Trump is to politics what Andy Kaufman was to wrestling.
Was he not?
Yeah.
I mean, Andy Kaufman, if he ran for president, Andy Kaufman would be doing exactly what Donald Trump is. You know what? We're going to fix it, and it's going to be better. And that's all you need to know.
Except Andy Kaufman, I don't think was inherently evil. Like, the danger with Trump is that he's an evil fuck.
I sometimes think he's evil, but then, like, the way he says, I love the Bible. We love the Bible.
Like, I'm not saying he's not funny.
He goes home. He has to go home and laugh his ass off because it is so obvious. Mm-hmm. It's like anybody who votes for him deserves to have him as their president.
However, look at how fucking popular he is
among a very limited slice of pie.
Okay, but isn't he ahead in the polls?
He is ahead in the polls among likely Republican primary voters. Okay. So he's like, he has 30% of 1/6 of the country. 8 years ago, people thought Sarah Palin was just as qualified as Barack Obama. 4 years ago, Michelle Bachmann was just as qualified as Barack. So the Republican Party always has to go through this because they've created this Frankenstein with their media empire.
That's a great point.
And I try to be fair, the crazier Democrats are not as crazy as the crazy Republicans.
Right.
They're just not.
Right. Who are the crazy Dems?
You know, I would say the far extreme 9/11 was an inside job crazies. Then you get to but the left does not have that media machine. We have girls. Right. They have
girls too. They have evil girls.
No, I mean we have the show girls, and they entire ravenous. Yeah.
Their girls are prettier.
Yeah, they have Michelle Malkin, and we have Lena Dunham. So of course, it's just kind of inspires more frothing. Lena just seems nice. You just want to hang out with her.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. But I don't think it's built to last. But in the meantime, it really makes me laugh.
But yeah, it does. But they're saying that he may have staying power because I tell you, like you just mentioned, Bachmann and
They don't have his skills. I fully grant you that.
Yeah, yeah, and he is a wrestler.
Pro wrestling. It's amazing.
It's wrestling with ties. That's
because
what I've
said. It's the only appeal to him is his standoffishness and his ability to say, even though he is convinced he's right, no matter how wrong he is.
Yes.
And people love that.
And I just heard a thing today. Yeah. It was like, this is his solution to the healthcare crisis. Obamacare, we're going to get rid of it, and we're going to replace with something better and cheaper. And it's like, okay.
That sounds great.
It's terrific. That was easy. The climate, we're going to fix it. It's going to be cold all the time now.
You know what's great about him?
You know what's great? Like,
you know, every day is going to be like a sweat. You want to wear a sweater? It's going to be that kind of day all the time. And people just go, okay, great. Finally.
They're like, yes!
Finally.
What's great about him is that he really does realize that it's just a soundbite society.
Yeah.
Right? There's no fucking... And I was going to say this before. The dumbing down of this country is complete. Is it not?
Yeah,
are we not pretty, basically in Mike Judge's Idiocracy?
I don't know. But see, I don't know if it is... If it has changed, or we're just there's no more places to hide. It's like I look at the,
it's become
the analogy
acceptable.
To that. Well, it's like furries.
Mm-hmm.
People who dress up like
I love
giant
when you talk
stuffed
about
animals.
Furries.
People dress up like giant stuffed animals, and then they fuck each other.
Really? Yeah. Now that sounds hot to me. Hot, not hot like, ooh, that's hot, but like just warm.
Oh, it is. I'm sure it's horrible.
Unless you get breathable. Anyway, go ahead. So people.
But like, were these people new? No, there was like, you know, there used to be a guy in, you know, in Wisconsin in the 1920s who was into that.
One guy.
But there was no internet, so he didn't know there was another guy in Tucson and another guy. And now it's like, and I just wonder, are we more aware of how dumb people are? Or are we really getting dumber?
Well, I read a book, and that's not to brag,
but it is.
Wait,
it is now
called Amusing.
A chapter book.
I don't know if I've ever talked about this book on this podcast, but called Amusing Ourselves to Death. Have you heard
of
it
book.
By Neil Postman?
Yeah, I have that book. Yeah.
And he talks
how to watch
about,
the news.
He talks about we became stupid when we went from a print culture. To a video culture. Yeah. And he wrote the fucking book.
Right.
Before the internet. I mean, you know, this is amazing. The Lincoln-Douglas debates.
Oh, yeah, those were like crazy. Yeah.
But they did the debates over 2 days. People, check this out. They would start the debate at, like, I don't know, you know, after lunch. People, they would go 6 hours. People would have dinner and come back and listen to them. Now it's like, fuck you.
Yeah. Well, if you ever read, like, if you ever read, like, letters from guys in the Civil War, they're like so amazing. It's like
even just, I can't, just the penmanship alone.
Yeah, the cascade.
Gorgeous.
The cascading sun paints this landscape in hues of pink and purple.
And these
redolent hues.
Literally, men who they had to make one type of shoe because they didn't know the left from the right.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, exactly. These were guys who would strangle people hand to hand
because they believed in something. Because
they didn't have the internet.
Well, in a way, you're right because. Yeah, there is no more hand-to-hand combat, which I miss, you know.
It's all drones.
It's drones.
It's all drones. The ultimate sellout.
You know, you talk about the Civil War and like...
Yeah.
And then the movie Lincoln. It's like, when you look at the life of Lincoln, man. Do you think, what do you think the people want to see? How he achieved cloture. That's the story we have to tell.
What is cloture again?
It was the entire second act of the movie Lincoln.
You know, it's funny. Like, I rail
about... How did you find the most boring story about Abe Lincoln to tell?
Yeah. It was all about the lighting in that movie.
Yeah, we're going to show the story of the life of Hugh Hefner. Or really, what are you going to do? When he decided he liked Pepsi more than Coke. That's what people want to know about.
Robe shopping.
That's true. That Lincoln movie. Spielberg did it, didn't he?
Yeah, but it was just like, really? This is the part of the story you want to tell?
I think he was trying to recover from War Horse, because basically that movie was, I love that horsey! If you saw War Horse, I had to see War Horse, which devastated me. Because
the play was amazing.
The play, I'm sure,
it was because you can't. Here's why the play War Horse was amazing. I saw the play. Really? The play was amazing, and it's because you can't have a play about a horse.
Well,
there's a horse, but they found a way to do it with these amazing puppets, and that was what was great. Once it's about a horse, then there's a horse there. Who gives a shit? You know, the point of the play is that they had to work around the fact that they couldn't have a horse.
Well, the other great horse play is
Caligula.
Equus. is Equus.
Yeah, but that's not really about.
And they did.
There's not a horse in it.
Yeah, they did the same thing. No, it was different. I mean, there weren't like a big, but they symbolize horses. You know, he stabbed a horse. It was about an English
kid who I just know in the movie Jenny Agutter's nude, and that's all I need to know.
Yeah,
he ruined the tracking on the tape in that one scene.
The movie had a drunk English actor in it, didn't it?
Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, it was Hopkins. No, he's Welsh.
He's a Welsh drunk.
Yeah. Former drunk Anthony. Sir Anthony.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So he thinks a horse comes into Cyrus Susan's. You are so into music, a certain kind of music. Well, tell us what you're into, and then I would talk about how you spent your summer, which is a really fascinating story.
Well, I actually, interestingly enough, in middle school is when I found out about the Smiths. When I was like 12 is when I first heard the Smiths, which couldn't have been a more perfect time.
Mm-hmm.
And which
blacksmiths and all sorts of craftsmen.
I was an apprentice.
Granny Smith. She went to an apple farm. Yeah. Yeah.
All of them. Robert, which actually is true. I got into that in middle school, which is perfect.
Wow. You beat me like by 20 years.
I feel like I was pretty confident in middle school, weirdly, for a person that age. When I was growing up, my stepdad was not a chill dude, not a nice dude. And I, even as a little kid, I remember being like, don't show this guy that he's hurting your feelings. Like, I remember as a child being like, don't cry in front of this guy. It means he wins. And like, always acting tough and being like, I don't care what you say. I'm tough. Who gives a shit? And I think that carried over in school and everyday life.
And it is strange, too, because people don't know that your stepfather was Fred Rogers of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which people think was such a nice guy.
I don't
want
to ruin the sheen of that guy's legacy, but he's kind of
she
a
was
dick,
the
it turns
one
out.
Person he actually didn't want to be your neighbor. You know? Like,
he kept trying to tie you to those tiny train tracks.
trolley. Because if I don't say it, someone will, and there might be a bomb in that letter. So I just saved your life, motherfucker.
Saved you from the anthrax letter.
Your stepfather's not Mr. Rogers. Yeah. Still around? Still married to your mom?
Yeah. He's still around.
It clearly knows your opinion of him.
Yeah, but it's gotten better since I'm an adult. It got way better once I moved out. And we're chill now. But growing up, I was like, I hate this guy so much.
I told the story earlier that my parents blanked on my birthday. I was just back in Massachusetts with my girls, my kids. My girls are my boobs. My kids are my daughters.
Right, it's very important distinction. Yes. Yeah.
My girls and I. And one of the things I always do when I go back home is I take the kids to the drive-in that I went to as a child and worked at in high school, and it is still going, and it is the
a great place for them to enjoy their cell phone games.
Well, there's always a kid. We saw Minions. It was great. That was I saw Minions on the night of the Republican debate. How coincidental. But my favorite memories of childhood, and this goes to what you're into, was in 1971. My parents took me to that drive-in to see Escape from the Planet of the Apes. In 1973, I went to see Battle for the Planet of the Apes. Like, those were my huge, imprinted, pleasant memories.
Right.
And I'm in my parents' kitchen. We're getting ready to go see Minions. And my mother goes, I find it so strange that I've been living here since 1954, and I've never been to that drive-in. You took me 3 times.
Oh, my God.
And then my father goes, well, I know I wasn't there. Like, yes, you were.
Oh, my God.
But unlike, not even as a kid, unlike 5 years ago, where I wouldn't have said anything and just been furious for a year, I was like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, I got up in their face. Like,
that would be the ultimate Planet of the Apes moment if it was revealed that they didn't take you at all.
No, I know.
And then you just Charlton Heston. You damn dirty parents.
It was in the backyard. I literally called my brother. Like, we went to the drive-in when I was a kid. Yeah, I remember. I had to get out of baseball practice early.
And what did your parents say when you called them on it?
They're like, oh, okay, I guess. You know, they're in their 80s, and they, you know, it's like, they can tell you what Donald Trump said yesterday.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Either it's just the one thing they forget or the only thing they remember, you know?
Yeah.
That's how old age works.
Yeah, right. Yeah, things stick with you.
You want them to just bring it up every single 5 minutes?
Yeah.
So he took you to see the ape movies, right?
Yeah, right. I also think that you, as you get older, you lose certain chunks. Both of them can remember a lot of shit from the 50s, but not much from the 70s. It just kind of skips around. They're still like, you know, they go shopping and they drive. They're not home in diapers or anything.
Right, right.
But they're starting to get those little, what? Really? Who? What? Yeah, there's a bit of that.
I don't mean to like undercut the fun about Trump, but I just, did you see this documentary that's getting
the fun of him?
That's getting a little play, a documentary about Trump called You've Been Trumped.
No.
He built a golf course in a beautiful part of Scotland, and it shows what he did to the locals.
Oh, he's
buying up their land. And that gorgeous coastline and all this nature, he could give off. He tore that stuff down. All these gorgeous fucking creatures gone. All this coastland gone. And these farmers, these salt-of-the-earth Scottish people are like, you're fucking Trump. You know, the movie follows like a couple of the farmers and then you see Trump lying about them. So it's an that's what's scary is that Trump is funny
all that stuff I think eventually. I mean, they say that like when everybody thought, oh my God, John McCain's gonna win because of Sarah Palin, and Barack Obama was like the only person not panicking purportedly and he was like, it's too long of a race to do it without the training and discipline.
Because the only thing they have on Hillary right now is these goddamn emails that, who cares?
The thing about poor Hillary is the emails and Benghazi, one knows what it is, but they know it's always something.
They know it's all the the right has to hang on her.
But it's always, there's always something going on. And people forget, like, when she was the first lady, she was accused of murder.
More than once.
They accused her of murdering Vince Foster.
Exactly.
That has been,
I forgot about that.
When she was the first, they accused her of murdering her friend. I mean, like, they throw everything at her that they can all the time.
He died under weird circumstances.
He committed suicide, and it's been ruled a suicide 11 times they investigated.
And they wrote cocksucker on his forehead.
he beat himself to death with Lionel Atwell's skull. That was what was strange.
Let me fact check that.
But
this erection is post mortem.
Talk about rigor mortis.
I like the conspiracy theory that Trump is in on it with Hillary, that he's just there to then run as a third party to drain off the votes from
He said he wouldn't do that just yesterday.
Well, if he said it, then I have to believe it.
That's exactly it. I know in Spy magazine, they always called him short-fingered vulgarian Donald Trump, which was always what they called him in Spy magazine.
You know what people are relating to, because he does have a popularity, is people are pissed off about a lot of shit. And he's one of these guys who, like, you know, he's just like, he gets in people's faces.
Right. They're desperate for someone to take a stand.
Yeah. Like that whole thing about, you know, what's wrong? Like, where did I see? Well, he was talking about Mexico or China or the border and Mexicans coming over the border.
Sure.
And he's like, people are just stupid. He goes, this is what he, no, I heard him say this. He goes, people are stupid. They don't fuck, they don't stand up to the Mexican government. They don't stand up to the Chinese government. And you're like watching this going, yeah, that's right. They don't fucking do. Why are they, you know, we should stand up to these people because we're getting our asses, everybody in this country, just except a very few people, are getting their asses handed to them daily.
It's as though they're treading on us, Eddie.
No, and so he really is the voice of, and it's weird. And he's the voice of the powerless, but he completely isn't for the powerless.
Just like CM Punk was the voice of the voiceless. It all comes back to pro wrestling.
Don't know CM Punk, but
you'd love him.
The one last thing about Trump is he says he's going to fix all these things, and people, yes! And then
make
he will
America
get in,
great.
And he will win, and he will get in and do nothing, and the people go, well, I won't let him. You know, there's just there's that thing where like you know, Obama said he would close Gitmo. He never closed Gitmo. He tried. They couldn't.
It's a brilliant system. You have to stand in awe of the brilliant system they put in place.
Yes, it is amazing.
They have mastered this system.
Legislative system.
I mean, it could be a national in the way that the voters in Minnesota were just so disgusted with their local government that they voted in Hulk Hogan.
Jesse Ventura.
Look at who we have. Now you're talking about
How did I confuse those two?
They both ripped off Superstar Billy Graham. I don't blame you.
Superstar Billy Graham. The preacher?
He took his name from The Preacher, and he took Superstar from Jesus Christ Superstar. He loves the Lord, Eddie.
Yes. And he has cocoa butter in his...
The first person, this is momentous, the first man to ever refer to his muscles as guns, Superstar Billy Graham.
Is that right? Did he wrestle with a cross on his back? Which I think it would have been interesting.
Also the guy who popularized anabolic steroids.
He was?
Oh, yeah. Really brought this that bodybuilder physique.
Was this in the 80s or the...
This is in the 70s. He was one of the first people that Arnold met when he came over from Austria, and he was hanging around Muscle Beach.
Oh.
Right over here in Venice, huh?
And how is it that Arnold never went into wrestling? You must know that story.
I think he just saw...
He made enough money doing the bodybuilding thing, and he didn't have to...
Yeah, he became the bodybuilding guy. And then I think he already had his eyes on politics.
Right.
Wasn't his old man a Nazi or something?
I'm sure.
I don't think there were any Nazis from Austria.
You sounded like Trump there. I don't think there were any Nazis in Austria.
I don't think there's any. I find, you know, he is a wrestler. And
a reality TV star.
Yeah.
And he knows that the election has become basically its spectacle. It really doesn't deal with issues. It's a spectacle, like the debates, in quote, you know, who comes off the best. That's all it's about.
It's like you said, there's a winner and there's a loser.
Yeah.
Image.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to get the nomination. I think that people will get tired of that act every day.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. When it comes down to substance, there's enough to sink him in a
weekend. But I don't think it'll ever come to that. I don't think that
it
people...
It won't come well, to substance well,
I,
is funny.
No, I mean, I think it'll die before it...
Yeah,
I think
oh,
it'll
I
die
see.
Off before substance is needed.
People are saying sure. that. And other people are saying, I don't know. He may have legs. But what's interesting, though, is the other Republican scumbag miscreants.
Yeah.
And I say that with all due respect to their families. Like, who wants to see Jeb fucking Bush? Not another Bush.
I know.
Please. Mm-hmm. I mean, oh, my God. I look at this guy, and I, you know what it is, too? These guys are so fucking, like, their evil is so banal. Like, Ted Cruz, fucking Scott Walker, fucking
yeah, but I don't
Jeb Bush.
I separate Jeb Bush from those two.
You do. You think he's a little more, little more sane?
I know.
Yeah, I guess
I know.
He is.
I actually know he is.
Yeah, I guess he is.
We have actually have a
because Scott Walker. Oh, really? Yeah.
Wow.
Scott Walker and Cruz are out of their fucking minds.
That's the thing is like Trump. To me, Scott Walker is the real bag of shit on that stage.
Oh, he's a bag of shit. So is Cruz, though.
But Cruz is a blatant bag of shit. You know, he looks like a Batman villain. Scott Walker. Yeah.
By the way, that would be a good parody, like an animated Republican debate, just different bags of shit.
Oh my God.
That speak.
There's a reason you get the big bucks.
Yeah. Or it's like
four, I am an idea guy.
Four
There's
bags
no doubt
of shit debating a canned ham.
Yes. God, that's genius.
But
like, Bush, you're saying here.
The thing about Ted Cruz is he looks so much like Grandpa Munster. There's no way.
Al Lewis?
He looks so much like Al Lewis.
Yeah.
It's unsettling.
Does that make Bernie Sanders Marilyn?
With me, Grandpa.
But, yeah, Scott. But you know, I can also, like, I really try to look at the other side of people and I'm like, not Hillary Clinton.
I know. Well, that's why I know Bernie Sanders doesn't have a
Same
chance
here.
Because he hasn't
why?
Been shot yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I understand that.
You know,
yeah.
If he was even that close, he'd have been put in a wheelchair at least.
Uh-huh.
Well, he's leading in, isn't he? There's two primaries. He's leading in New Hampshire, they say, right?
Well, that makes sense.
Oh, okay, it does. And because
Liberals with guns, that's New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, maybe I should.
Yeah.
I've shot a gun once in a rifle range, and... I came home with a huge bruise on my shoulder.
Yes.
I'm not a real man, you know what I mean?
Well, that's all man. Yeah.
That's just that proves that you're gay. It has nothing to do with your sexual preference at all. You can be a man that sleeps with a woman, but if a gun will bruise you, then you're a
they call that a cum shot.
Yeah, you're a homo in the eyes of the Lord. Those movies and that whole world, horror movies and stuff like that. Mm. That was the stuff where I would take my mental vacations.
Right.
You had comic books.
Yeah.
And you get into music. But what's weird is that yours is hip.
It wasn't at
before,
the time.
But before, like, you were into, like, you get into music that I didn't get into until I was in my 20s.
Right.
When you were, like, 13.
Well, it was a pure coincidence because, actually, I think I told the story before, but, like, a friend...
Although when you were 13, I was in my 20s, so maybe that makes sense.
Well, it wasn't... I mean, a friend of my parents had a son who was way older than me. He was, like, 20 when I was 12, and he handed me a whole thing of cassette tapes one night because he was moving out and was just like, here, you can have this, and the Smiths was in it.
And it was
so
just
it was,
tapes
like,
of him showering night after night after night.
Audio only, too. It was
now
weird.
I'm washing my legs.
Yeah. It was a total coincidence, but in my school, no one was into it. In my school, it wasn't like, oh my God, you're so cool. Wearing Morrissey t-shirts to middle school.
I can't imagine
I was
that.
Not a cool person because of that, because everyone's like, who the hell is this dude?
Yeah, that so, can't, yeah, he looks like Elvis, and he
I mean, and at that
behaves
time,
like
let's
Paul
be real. At, yeah, it was like, who's this fag? Yeah, exactly.
Circle gets the square. Yeah.
But finding him at that time, in that situation, because I was outwardly all tough and funny, it was like the first time where I was like, it's okay to be sad. And I don't mean to pigeonhole more. I don't think Morrissey is sad 100% of the time, like all critics who get it wrong. But I'm just saying at that time, I was like, oh my God, like... This guy who I think is like super cool is openly being like, I'm sad a lot and that's okay. And
no,
that doesn't make me a loser. And I'm like, oh my God, okay. So I'll listen to this in my room all the time.
See, I wish that I had him in junior high when you do go through those awkward times because The only like popular music that was openly maudlin when I was a kid was leftover Simon and Garfunkel.
Right.
And I hate Simon and Garfunkel.
How old were you when Alone Again Naturally came out, which is the saddest song of all time? But
I think it was 1974. I was 10. I remember the song being on the radio. It was just a little bit, and I believe that was Leo Sayer.
Mm-hmm.
And I also
that was Gilbert O'Sullivan.
Gilbert O'Sullivan.
Yeah.
And I also believe it was a rejected Beach Boys track.
Really?
Wow. Mm-hmm. There's like a verse about his mom throwing herself off a roof.
Yes. Leo Sayer's song was When I Need You, I Hold Out My... One of those was a rejected Beach Boys track.
Really?
Yeah. I think Alone Again Naturally was, which is kind of good. Because especially if it sounded like fun. Alone Again Naturally, but that's what the Smiths did, and that's what Morrissey does that Simon and Garfunkel could not do,
right?
Is that he would sing these maudlin lyrics, but in a great song that was upbeat and funny, and they're funny. He's self-aware.
Exactly.
You know, it was a beautiful day. I was driving with my kids. I was just in a great mood, and I'm roaming the radio, and there's one of the stations we have is a 60s on 6, and we're just roaming the radio, and then it just goes like, it was that song. I forget the name of the song, but the lyric is, and you read your Emily Dickinson, and I my Robert Frost. And we note, and this is the line, and this is the line, and my kids are in the car, and he goes, and we note our place with bookmarkers that measure what we've lost. The Dangling Conversation is the name of the song. And with my children in the car, I Amazing. Looked at my radio and screamed, fuck you!
And then what are they? Were they like, Dad?
I swear on them a lot, but they're like, Dad, I hate this song. Mm-hmm. It's not funny. It's like,
right.
But see, like Morrissey like, would sing like hilarious song, like really great songs about being sad, but they're funny also.
Exactly. You get it.
Yeah, you also don't want to hang out with someone who like reads a whole Robert Frost book. Like, what kind of shitty asshole are you? You fucking Garfield calendar of a person.
Also writing this, living in Manhattan during the late 60s, there's nothing better to do.
Yeah, good point.
You could get blown by Edie Sedgwick. You could be seeing the Velvet Underground play for 28 cents.
Exactly.
No, I'm reading Robert Frost. Right. Yeah. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, there's
then.
A drag
That's
queen.
That's your choice.
There's a drag queen being beaten to death on the street. Exactly. And you're like, oh, there are different roads you could travel. Again, you know the thing about like Morrissey and a lot of that 80s music, like David Byrne and all that. I don't like Talking Heads and Smiths that much, but I love their like older solo work because.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because I feel like the age caught up to the persona.
Mm-hmm.
That's really well observed. Yeah, I never got into the Talking Heads. Like, I always liked them. A really good friend of mine in college, who is actually responsible for my musical education, my friend, oddly, Dana Crovo, who lives in Maine. Hello, Dana, if you're listening.
They were part of the No Danas Club. They were allowed to have one.
We were roommates at freshman orientation at UMass Amherst, and he said, his name is Dana. I said, my name is Dana. My name is Dana John. His name is Dana George. And I said we were half the Dana Beatles. and we were friends all through college. Where I went to high school, even in the early, like this is 81, 82, the biggest band in my high school was Jethro Tull.
Right.
Yeah.
And
the Police were fags.
I was about to say, like at that time, people weren't into like the Police or U2 or anything.
No, they
like
were.
That.
Isn't
it weird that you went to a high school where they beat the shit out of you for not being into flute solos?
Yeah, exactly.
I never thought of that, but it's true.
Exactly.
It was The River's Edge, if you ever saw that movie. Like, that's where I went to high school, but in Massachusetts.
Right.
And the Police were, quote, fags, quote, because they dyed their hair.
Right.
The Jam were. Quote, fags, quote.
Morrissey was definitely, quote, a fag, quote.
Because they, well, the Jam were fags because they wore suits.
Sure. Oh,
they wore
exactly.
suits. Morrissey was a fag because he had sex with men.
Right.
I was wondering if it was because they were progressive. Like, we don't like that they're appropriating Jamaican culture.
No, the Jam opened for Blue Oyster Cult.
They were too pretty.
They opened for Blue Oyster Cult at the Worcester Centrum in 1981.
That's the craziest lineup ever.
And were booed off the stage.
That is insane.
They were chased out of that building with sticks.
Insane.
Yeah,
were you
that's
there?
A bad book. No, but I know people that that were there.
That's
and
so,
then later when I get into the gym, have read many,
right,
many stories of this famous train wreck of a concert.
The Beastie Boys opened for Madonna in the 80s, and that must have been fucking weird.
Oh, totally, because that was when they were still doing Girls and stuff like that.
And they all had to sleep with her later, and it was just like sleeping with a marionette made of gristle.
But just imagine, like, you want to hear Lucky Star, and then it's like, your mom brought home your best pawn, no mag.
Right.
I know that's not the lyric, but yeah.
When the Beastie Boys came out, I remember musicians that I liked making fun. Like, they were insufferable.
Oh, yeah.
Originally.
They were super not respected.
And it really was,
like,
it wasn't until like Paul's Boutique that people started like, well, maybe they can do something.
Right.
But when they first came out, I remember seeing Elvis Costello specifically at a concert going, you know, you have to fight for your right to party.
Amazing.
It's so hard because people are always trying to take away your right to party.
Amazing.
And we were like, all the R.E.M.
Yeah, I didn't like the Beastie Boys when they first came out because I was just like, who are these dudes yelling at me all the time?
And then they did, oh, no, actually, they're good.
Right, exactly.
People changed their mind.
We
actually,
all collectively were like, wait a minute, I respect them.
That was actually better.
Yeah.
Better than I thought.
Yeah.
But my friend Dana Grovo got me into all of those bands, and Talking Heads was one of those bands that I never, like, I was aware of them, but I never, like,
yeah.
But he was like, no, they're great, and here's why they're great. And, like, I can appreciate it. Now, I remember, like, seeing Stop Making Sense when it came out. It was really impressive. I think that he got the idea from that big suit by watching Perry Mason. If you look at Raymond Burr's suits on Perry Mason, he looks just like David Byrne.
That's amazing.
Burr Byrne.
Yeah. Oh, very good. And Raymond Burr, famously a member of the police.
Also, his secretary was Lincoln and Kennedy. No, I don't know.
Raymond Burr, famous queen, acted every day on a television series for like however long that show was on, like 7 or 8 years, with the son of the leading gossip columnist in Hollywood, had a Hopper's son, played Paul Drake. And
they never found out?
They either knew and they kept it quiet, or they never found out. What he did was his agents or his publicists spread a story that he had a wife and a son. They died in a plane crash. Don't talk about it.
Was it a flaming plane crash?
Apparently. But the theory was like, he'll never date again. He'll never date a woman again.
Of course.
He can't talk about it. And everyone like, well, okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That checks out.
So yeah, that checks out. That's so funny.
That's the difference between then and now. They just tell a story. And people are like, yeah, okay. But like TMZ now would like just fucking follow that guy everywhere.
Completely,
yeah.
Like, completely.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we dig up your kid's skeleton? Yeah. I posted a thing on Facebook. I understand people that like guns. I grew up, I had a gun cabinet in my bedroom. You know, I have 4 older brothers. Yeah. My dad, they all hunt. They all own rifles. Guns all over the goddamn
guns
place.
Guns were part of your growing
guns
up.
Guns were, I was eyeball deep
we
in
never
them.
Had a gun in the house.
But I'm like you. I mean, I've shot guns, but I don't, they don't make me hard.
Right.
And so I posted this thing, and I was just like, look, I get it. You know, I get guns. I get people enjoy shooting. The average, like, normal, rational gun owner knows that the NRA has nothing to do with nothing to do with them. The NRA is completely about destroying as many gun laws as possible to sell guns for the gun manufacturers. That's who pays their salaries. That's why there are things that gun owners are for, like universal background checks, that the NRA staunchly opposes.
Mm-hmm.
There are things like,
they don't care how many schools shooting. It's just amazing with
just
all the
sell,
massacres,
you know,
basically, you know, semi-daily in this country,
yes,
that they're like, you know what? Come on. This is about the Constitution, not about a couple of school kids.
Right. No, the NRA is saying, if you don't want to get shot in church, bring a gun to church. And the average gun owner says, no, that's lunacy. You know, they know that's they know that's crazy, but the NRA is not interested in the needs of the average rational gun owner. That's not where their bread is buttered. And I basically posted that. And the other thing I posted was like, and I don't understand people who literally think the government is going to get them and that they and their overweight friends are going to defeat the 1st Armored Division from their porch. You would be surprised at how many people have an answer ready. Well, actually, I have it on very good authority. The guys in the army aren't really going to do it.
They're going to be sympathetic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To which then you don't need a gun.
Exactly.
If the only reason you have a gun is to defend your right to have a gun from somebody who's not going to take it from you, you don't really need to spend that money. But, you know, but then, as I said, look up at the sky. That pinprick is the sun because you've gone down a rabbit hole. You should have never gone down. And, but it's like just the ferocity of the.
Oh, you got just from a post like that.
Oh, my God. It's on. Yeah. If somebody's Facebook photo is they are wearing camouflage and they are holding a gun over a background of a picture of somebody else holding a different gun, you're not going to get a reasonable argument from them. Again, most people are normal, but there are people that do think, like, the army's coming to get me. That's and right. I'm going to win. Oh. I'm more concerned with the Third Amendment and the quartering of soldiers in homes during wartime, which is what the Third Amendment is. Mm-hmm.
The quartering of soldiers.
Yeah, the Third Amendment mandates how many soldiers you have to put up in your house during a war.
Right, because that's a lot of, like, hors d'oeuvre, like, just the cooking element.
The Second Amendment was also written for a farm with no army. I mean, that's right. Basically what it was. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, you have to if there comes a time when we need an army, you have to be the army. That's the subtext of that amendment.
And the Third Amendment is going to the mattresses.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was like, I said, like, well, that guy in the guy that shot up the theater in Denver, like, I think if you have that much weaponry at home, that should automatically trigger. Like, if there's a database of what you have in your home, then at a certain volume, it would trigger a visit from a mental health person. Like,
and that mental health person should come armed.
Yes, but it's like, couldn't help noticing you bought 2,000 rounds of ammunition last week.
It'd be just funny just seeing social workers come like a SWAT team, but they're social workers. We're social workers! Open up! Yeah. And they just have huge fucking and scopes. And
in my post about, like, that, you know, the average comment was, I have more than that asshole. But that's not a good thing at all.
Well, they're so afraid of, like, you know, things coming at, like...
Well, that's what the whole economy's based on.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. You know?
Yeah.
It's what my life is based on.
Sure.
You know? Yeah. Honey, I'm going to Ralph's. Please, I love you.
Yeah. Well, that was the...
There's so much traffic out here, I just feel scared. I get scared fucking stepping in a car here sometime. I read these far-left guys, and they're saying that Trump's popularity is kind of due to the fact that there's so much fucking unemployment, you know, manufacturing base kind of gone. You know what I mean? Yeah. Globalization.
Oh, he's telling these people what they want to hear.
And look at your Facebook page. I mean, these are fucking disaffected people, man.
Yeah. And it's like, my mother loves Trump. And it's also because my mother loves Trump. And it's because his solutions, she can understand his solutions. We're going to fix it. It's going to be better.
That's a great thing, too, by the way. Like, well, that's why people like
in
it.
In a bicameral legislature, what we need.
Right.
Yeah.
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 I think that he can turn this country into what it once was. A desolate wasteland ruled by flying reptiles and terrifying animals. Our national anthem will be sung in screams. I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say by 2016, have 70% unemployment and an ISIS flag over the White House. That's my prediction.
That is bold. That's bold.
And I just hope to God we're still doing comedy, but it's very clean because of ISIS. It's just extremely down the middle.
And
Andy Kindler is. I was just thinking how would Kindler would do. So I'm the bad guy because my wife doesn't have a veil.
Yeah. Yeah, Jimmy Brogan becomes the most successful comedian. And what do you do, sir?
You cower in fear.
What are you afraid of?
Yeah, instead of what do you do for a living? So what are you most afraid of? How are you going to die, sir?
So what is
that's
your
the comics
fear?
Question.
Yeah. 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 So what are you dying of?
He will be to ISIS what Jimmy Brogan. I hope Jimmy's not listening. He's such a nice man.
I know.
He will be to ISIS what the guitarist was in Mad Max that was chained to the top of the
tree. Yes. Oh, you got it.
ISIS will just come into town that. in a runaway tanker truck with Jimmy Brogan and his tan pants, canvas belt, and light blue Oxford shirt with a microphone just going out to people. It's like, what do you do, sir?
It's like the microphone is in a baby Bjorn that's just strapped to him.
Lower the engines! Brogan is going to do...
Like they have to really lower all the machinery around
so
him.
So Jimmy can talk.
So he could say, and what do you do, sir? And then after he answers, it goes back up. Oh, that image is Brogan tied. Yeah. Oh, my God.
And then the torture is like if the people don't submit, they have that Clockwork Orange thing where they hold their eyes open and they watch an endless gif of Jimmy Fallon and Ellen dancing with each other. Which is, it's not that they're dancing with each other, but they're beaming at themselves. Like, how do you beam at yourself? It's like I have one photo of me looking like that when I was handed my baby.
They get babies handed to them every day in this society. And every time I criticize Jimmy Fallon, I always get, he's a, from someone I'm interviewing, he's a really nice guy.
He is.
And I know he is. I know he is, too. Yeah.
It doesn't mean I can't hate what you represent.
Yeah.
But Ellen is a violent drunk.
Were you heavy into comics from...
I was heavy really and into age? Comics is usually how it works.
As was I. But not. I was not into overly into superhero comics.
I have two passions, and the other is pro wrestling. And I got out of pro wrestling, but then I got back into it just as comics was starting to become cool to everyone. I was like, I still need something that will never be great.
Everybody is into pro wrestling.
No, they're not.
Every comedian I know is into pro wrestling big time.
It's probably the same seven guys, and they just say it a lot.
Well, it's you, Dan St. Germain, and Matt McCarthy. I grew up in Georgia.
There are definitely some comics who are into it, but it's a lot of them that say they are and actually aren't. There's the guys like Ron Funches and a Sean O'Connor and a Matt McCarthy who they're the diehard guys, but they're the other guys.
I didn't know Ron was into professional wrestling.
Oh my God. Oh, yeah. I love professional wrestling. Mike Burns and Brito, like those guys go to stuff all the time.
When they said, I want to be a macho man, I thought they meant Randy Savage.
Yeah. That's what I was. I mean, growing up in Georgia, I was kind of into it by default. It was on TBS. We got TBS, so I watched it all the time. But that was like the time when it was still like Ultimate Warrior, Big Boss Man.
Oh, yeah.
Like Butch
Everyone
Whackers.
Had a job. That's
when I was into it the most.
Yeah, that was why, when people were saddened by the fact that Hulk Hogan was racist, they forgot one of his best friends on the show was a black guy who came out in a chain and barked like a dog.
Well, also,
and he was one of the more dignified ones. Yeah. Like, but it's amazing. Like, see,
what was his name?
Well, that was the Junkyard Dog.
Oh, the Junkyard Dog. Yeah. See, I was not into it. I was like, it would have been great if his name was Melvin Bishop. Yeah,
named for the
Furious Accountant.
No, but Junkyard Dog named for the Jim Croce song.
The Jim Croce song, Bad Leroy Brown.
Yeah,
summer of 1973.
Yeah, they could have just called him that, but like, no, let's call him a dog.
Yeah.
Well, it's like when Michael Clark Duncan played the gorilla general in Tim Burton's Planet of the
Apes. Bow your head.
Like, did his agent, hey, got an offer on the Tim Burton movie. Yeah. What do I play?
Sit down.
A military figure.
Yeah, totally.
Meanwhile, Giamatti's like, I gotta be the fucking orangutan,
Here's the story of Nightmare Before Christmas. A guy is in charge of Halloween. He wants to be in charge of Christmas. It doesn't go well. So he goes back to Halloween. He doesn't learn anything. There's no obstacles.
Yeah, he does. He does learn something. He learns that you have to accept who you are, and when you try to be something else, it doesn't work.
But that he didn't earn it. What he learned, I would say this. He didn't earn what he learned. I could argue.
Earn what you learn.
I disagree.
That's a bumper sticker.
No, because he scared all the people and stuff.
But he didn't. But yes, he did. But he never had the. He never had. The realization that, this is not what Christmas is. I'm Halloween. this is, kids aren't supposed to be scared, and there's value to not being scared, and I can't exist without this. I get it now. He's just like, oh, this sucked. I'm better at Halloween.
Yeah, but there's a scene where all the kids freak out over the toys and
stuff. And it's very funny, and it's entertaining.
And he feels bad about it.
I don't see the latter part of that. I don't see the scene where he goes, oh, this is wrong.
You guys should arm wrestle over this.
This interview is over.
Let's determine the winner over the top style.
We should just have like Nightmare Before Christmas debates the whole episode. I've never seen anyone under 200 pounds who loves that film. Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Hot Topic is in business.
I love that film. Yeah. I have the little figures in that room.
I think it's great.
Yeah. It's like, I love Raiders of the Lost Ark. But Indiana Jones is wholly unnecessary to the plot of that movie. I've said this before.
Yeah.
But he does.
Because no matter what happens, once they find the Ark, that was going
to
happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. His job was to keep the Ark out of the hands of the Nazis. He fails. Yeah.
That is the most Jewish plot ever.
It's like, a very Jewish plot.
It's not for you. Just Spielberg, like, see?
And also, the only thing that he changed was he provoked Belloc into opening it there. Had he never showed up, the only thing possible was that it would have gone straight to Hitler, he would have opened it, and there would have been no World War II. Maybe Indiana Jones caused World War II to happen. That's the only glitch. And the other one is James Bond is pretty unnecessary in Goldfinger. He gets a couple of women killed, and he gets the shit kicked out of him, and then the CIA comes in and turns off the Bond that he's handcuffed to. He doesn't
but
really
if it wasn't
anything.
For James Bond, we wouldn't be able to see Oddjob's haircut.
That's right.
He'd keep the hat on the whole time.
I also love, there's a scene in Diamonds Are Forever, which like Sean Connery had not been a Bond for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And apparently he spent that time at a restaurant, and he takes off his shirt, and he looks like my dad. He's got a big gun.
Just because he'd been sitting in his George Lazenboy. Oh, God, nice. That's awful.
But he's got a big gun, his toupee's on bad, and Jill St. John goes, oh, James. It's
like, that's the thing. There's those guys
should be
like,
saying, oh, Uncle Mike.
There are guys like Connery and Schwarzenegger that make no sense to me anymore. Like, they don't fit in this world now.
No.
Like, I saw Terminator Genisys, and I call it that because it felt like an ISIS movie. And the thing is, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger as an idea doesn't make sense. He's too weird. Like,
yes.
Like, they even do, like, an explanation as to why he's older. You know, he's
they
like.
They did in the movie?
Yeah, they're like, the human tissue ages. But it's like, but they don't explain
why
he's.
Oh, yeah, that he's a robot that ages. That's
Yeah. But they don't explain that he's the only Austrian robot. All the other robots don't talk like that.
Right.
I never thought of that.
And it's like, Connery, like, never. I don't know. Is he cooler because he never changed the accent?
And that's also, an accent of nowhere. No one from Scotland sounds like that. Like,
yeah.
That's
and
not
he has
a real
a big
accent.
Speech impediment.
Oh, he does?
Yeah. Stop.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Isn't even in, like, in The Untouchables, isn't he supposed to
if
be Irish?
If he was
Irish?
Jewish, you were like, stop stopping me.
Yeah. Isn't he Irish in The Untouchables? Is he
supposed to be? Yes, yeah, he is.
Then
the Chicago way. He sounds like Groundskeeper Willie. Yeah.
Exactly.
The Hunt for Red October, you know? Mm. Right? Isn't he Russian in that?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, that's insane. Yeah, that's insane.
He doesn't even sound like a dragon in Dragonheart. Like, it just,
I guess he is Russian. Rush, I'm from Leningrad.
He was one of those actors whose names you don't know, but whose face you recognize instantly. One of those actors who walks on screen and you immediately say, oh yeah, that guy. Albert Dekker. Happily married with 3 children, he played Willie Loman on Broadway in Death of a Salesman. Albert Dekker made his screen debut in the 1937 film The Great Garrick. His most memorable role was the title character in the 1940 sci-fi epic Dr. Cyclops. That film was later remade with Sidney Poitier as They Call Me Mr. Dr. Cyclops. No. Albert Dekker was in Sam Peckinpah's masterpiece The Wild Bunch, Elia Kazan's East of Eden, The Killers. The list goes on and on and on and on. He hit a rough patch,
got divorced, and in the 1950s got himself blacklisted for publicly denouncing Joe McCarthy and the House of Un-American Activities Committee. He turned to lecturing college audiences to pay the rent. Decker was not un-American. In fact, he was elected to the California legislature in 1944 and served a full term. He was a strong advocate for women's rights and was against the death penalty, which was not common in the 1940s. One of the reasons his anti-death penalty law was defeated was that people felt it would diminish the suspense of murder trials. True story. But despite all this, Albert Decker called Joseph McCarthy insane in public. Joseph McCarthy was not insane. He was an amoral, opportunistic, drunken asshole, but at the time, he was an amoral, opportunistic, drunken asshole that a lot of people feared. And poor Albert Decker spent about 19 years on Hollywood's persona non grata list. But by May of 1968, you could say things were looking up. The winds of time had finally dissipated the awful stench of Joe McCarthy and the House of Un-American Activities, and Albert Decker was back at work. He was also happily engaged to one Geraldine Saunders, a model, or, as they were known at the time, a fashion model. Albert and Geraldine had just closed on a new home in the hills of Encino in anticipation of their marriage. And in the meantime, Decker was staying in an apartment at 1731 North Normandy in beautiful Hollywood, California. On May 3rd, Albert and Geraldine had attended Zero Mostel's new play, The Latent Heterosexual, at Huntington Hartford Theater in beautiful Hollywood. That was on Thursday night. Decker was a no-show to their date on Friday. And in an age before cell phones and answering machines, Geraldine left a note on his apartment door, adding it to several others from other concerned friends, wondering just where the hell Dr. Cyclops went. Geraldine returned later that night, saw all the notes still there, and had the apartment manager open the door. What she saw when they opened that door, quite literally, caused her to pass out. Now, this is grim, so if you don't want to hear it, you might want to skip ahead about 70 seconds. And I say that knowing not one of you will, and that is why I love you. Albert Decker, born Albert Van Eck, 6'3", 240 pounds, was found with a hangman's noose around his neck, but not tight enough to strangle him. A scarf was tied over his eyes, and something like a horse's bit, fashioned out of a rubber ball and metal wire, was jammed into his mouth. The bit had reins made of chain, which were fastened tightly behind his head. Two leather thongs were girded around his neck and chest. A third belt around his waist was tied with a rope that stretched around his ankles. He had hypodermic needles dangling from each arm and his right buttock. His body was covered in obscene words and drawings, all done in lipstick. And he was handcuffed. After a brief investigation, Los Angeles detectives ruled it a suicide, based on their observations that there were no signs of forced entry or struggle. The coroner, who famously remarked, "This one has everything but a vampire bite," disagreed. The LA coroner ruled it accidental asphyxiation while attempting autoerotic asphyxia. After all, this was Hollywood. But the people who knew Decker, and some in the press, disagreed. The UPI opined suicide. A New York columnist asked, "The police said he had been found bound and handcuffed, and they listed the death as a suicide?" Question mark. Another question. If Decker had been alone, how could he have legibly written on his own ass with lipstick the word whip? WHIP below a drawing of the sun was written in lipstick on his buttock, just above the dangling hypodermic needle. The word was perfectly legible. The police confirmed that he had been injected with a drug. Geraldine Saunders believed that Albert could have been bound and choked only if he had been unconscious, i.e. drugged. After all, he was a very large, healthy fella, quite capable of defending himself against an attacker. Another glaring hint that something wasn't right, $70,000 in cash was missing. Albert and Geraldine were in escrow on their new home, and Decker was using the lure of cash as a bargaining tool.
Saunders claimed, "I think it was someone he knew and let into the apartment." Decker had only been in the Normandy apartment for a week and was staying there only until the escrow on the Encino home closed. He chose that particular apartment building because a friend of his managed it. That, quote, friend, quote, disappeared right after Decker's death, and Saunders has always believed that he had something to do with it. But no one ever considered that it might have been someone he recognized, or who was already in the apartment when he got home. Someone who wanted the actor to suffer humiliation before and after death. As of now, the sad, mysterious case of Albert Decker remains closed. But I will tell you one thing. If I was Jack Klugman, and this was an episode of Quincy, I would be saying, "Autoerotic asphyxiation, we're talking murder here!" Now, that is not my impression of Jack Klugman as Quincy. That is my impression of comedian Brian Kiley doing his impression of Jack Klugman as Quincy. Now, one may ask, as weird as the story of Albert Decker is it weirder than that of Lionel Atwill? Well, yes, it is, actually, by a long shot. But now that I have you here, why don't I tell it to you? Lionel Atwill, an English gentleman, born in 1885, famed stage actor who, after divorcing his first wife, married General Douglas MacArthur's ex-wife, Louise Cromwell Brooks. What did Lionel Atwill do? Oh, Lionel Atwill. Dirty, dirty Lionel Atwill. Atwill went to Hollywood and began working in movies around 1931. Although his first film was The Silent Witness, he really made his mark in horror movies, starting that year with Dr. X, moving on to The Vampire Bat, Mystery of the Wax Museum, Captain Blood, The Hound of Baskervilles. His most famous role was in 1935's Son of Frankenstein, where he played Inspector Krogh, he with the wooden arm so hilariously parodied by Kenneth Mars in Young Frankenstein. On Thursday, May 8th, 1940, the Los Angeles County Grand Jury took up the investigation of one Sylvia Hamelane, aged 16, who claimed to have been, quote, mistreated by several film celebrities. The star witness was one Virginia Lopez, who spoke of a wild party during which Hamelane had been molested. The problem? Lopez and an ex-car salesman named Adolph LaRue were awaiting trial in another case concerning Sylvia Hamelane, in which Hamelane claimed that Lopez and LaRue mistreated her. Sylvia Hamelane was one of those wide-eyed innocents who quite literally stepped off a bus from Hibbing, Minnesota, fun fact, Bob Dylan's hometown, hoping to become a star. One day, while sunbathing, she met Lopez and LaRue. They became friends. Then they became more than friends. You know, mistreaty friends. On Christmas night, Lopez took Hamelane to the home of a famous actor, where she saw lewd motion pictures. Then, according to Miss Hamelane, the guests disrobed. And, she asserted, after some urging, she did it as well. It was later revealed that Miss Hamelane, at Miss Lopez's urging, attended a similar function at the same home a few days previous. During both parties, everybody mistreated everybody else. Lopez and LaRue were eventually charged with statutory rape. Lopez's lawyer, however, claimed that Virginia Lopez was nothing but a patsy, a fall gal, a pigeon, taking the hit to cover up for the more well-known Hollywood types who were famous for their lavish, mistreatment-themed parties. The host of the party in question was none other than Lionel Atwill, the husband of General Douglas MacArthur's ex-wife. Lionel Atwill was summoned to appear before the grand jury. He vehemently denied the entire tawdry affair as a shakedown. On May 21st, Atwill appeared before the grand jury and said, "I have returned from New York to testify voluntarily, and I intend to remain here until my name is cleared. I emphatically and categorically deny all charges of any improper acts that have occurred in my home or that any indecencies took place in the presence of the Hamelane girl. However,
like Albert Decker's butt, something wasn't right. So after a few more witnesses came forward and testified, Atwill was resummoned, a perjury trap was set, and he fell into it. Atwill came to admit that he owned several improper motion pictures, and with that added to his perjury charge, received 5 years probation. But that was the least of his problems. The case was now public, and Atwill was having a hard time getting work. Not long after, his wife sued him for divorce. He remarried almost immediately, and, after a respectable amount of time, resumed work yet again. He made serials and appeared in the final two pictures in Universal Studios' Frankenstein series, House of Frankenstein and House of Dracula. My point is simple. Show business is full of the best people ever. Would you like to read more about filth like this? I bet you do. I can't recommend this book strongly enough. Hollywood Babylon by Kenneth Anger. Or for a more sober assessment of the golden age of Hollywood, you can do no better than Otto Friedrich's excellent City of Nets. Where do you get these? Amazon.com. How do you get there? You go to danagould.com and you click on our Amazon banner. You get what you need, and for not one extra cent, Amazon kicks a few shekels our way so we can keep the lights on and pay the nice people who bring you this podcast. While you're at danagould.com, why not become a member of our podcasting family? You can subscribe or just donate. I promise you, no one within 400 miles of this podcast is making a profit. We're just trying to get the thing out the goddamn door. Why not check out our merchandise store at comedyfilmnerds.com? You can get Bevel Aqua Heating and Air Conditioning t-shirts, Dana Gould Hour t-shirts, ringtones, as well as signed copies of my comedy albums, Funhouse and Let Me Put My Thoughts in You. Or for all three albums on CD, Funhouse, Thoughts, and my new one, I Know It's Wrong, go to comedyfilmnerds.com. So do yourself a favor, check it out. Now, before we get back to the show, I have one question. Let's say you found a time machine, and you want to use it to travel back in time and attend an orgy at Lionel Atwill's house. Well, you're going to want to look your best, and that requires a great shave. For many of us, shaving is a pain. It's uncomfortable, and razor blades are outrageously expensive. Harry's was started by two guys who wanted a better product without paying an arm and a leg to get it. Harry's makes their own blades, high-quality, high-performing German blades, crafted by German shaving experts. They offer high-quality shave that's better for your face and for your wallet. Harry's blades are about half the price of the other big-branded blades, and they ship for free to your front door. Now, here's some exciting news from Harry's. They've officially launched two new products, Foaming Shave Gel and Aftershave Moisturizer. The starter set is an amazing deal. For $15, you get a razor, foaming shave gel, and three razor blades. So go to harrys.com, and they'll give you $5 off if you type in my coupon code, Dana, D-A-N-A, with your first purchase. That's $10. That's Harry's, H-A-R-R-Y-S.com, and enter the coupon code Dana, D-A-N-A, and check it out. You get $5 off, so why not start shaving better today? And even if you don't have a time machine, who knows? Something could happen.
It's intermission time.
They come from miles to enjoy our intermission.
Welcome to Political Talk with two guys from Boston. A working man's look at the socio-political issues of our day. And now, Political Talk with two guys from Boston.
This is Political Talk with you guys from Boston. I'm Johnny Condon.
I'm Robbie Sullivan. I'm hot. Yeah.
It's the dog days of fall.
It kind of is.
It's the dog days, my friend.
Yeah. Well, you know global warming's real now.
Yeah. Well, you can't call it global warming. It's climate change.
Oh, that's nice.
Because sometimes global warming leads to more snow.
Oh.
And people go, see, there's no global warming. It's cold out.
But there is climate change.
In the same way that people
every 10 minutes in Massachusetts. Yeah,
there's a lot of snow, and people say there's no global warming. There's snow outside. That's like saying there's no such thing as cows. We're out of milk.
I like that.
I got no time, as my father would say. I got no time for it.
I got no time for it. I'm not thinking about that.
Deal with it.
My mother says, okay, we're going to lay the gay to this until we can deal with it. Just lay the gay to
it. We're just going to sweep this right under the bed.
Not today.
Deal with it.
Not for today.
When they are living in a waterless wasteland fighting each other for dog food cans, they're going to speak well of us.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, just a lot of home movie footage of people with their sprinklers on while they're on vacation.
I know you got the messages on your machine, but the other night I see an announcement that the Pixies, well, I guess it's a little ways back now, but the Pixies played at TT in the Biz.
How is that possible? It's 150
unreal.
People.
It's unreal. They couldn't get their own family in.
Everything is back.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. The return of where we came from has landed.
The Who are touring.
They're touring and healthy, except for the dead ones.
The dead ones. Half of the Who
is
touring.
That's nice. The what?
The Who.
They took the O off, and I think that's respectful.
And I saw their first last tour 20 years ago.
With Entwistle.
Yeah, 22 years ago.
That's amazing.
No, it was more. It was 82, whatever, however many years that was.
The
I
Who
don't
is smart.
Think about
they
it.
Wait until their fans have forgotten that, and they come out again and do it again. It's nice.
It's their first last tour. It's like telling your kids, your mother and I are getting divorced. And then nothing happens, and then a couple weeks later, we're getting divorced.
But is it like Cheech and
it's
Chong?
It's always a celebration.
Is it like Cheech and Chong where the two men don't really speak to each other outside the act?
I'm sure that's what
I
it
mean,
is.
I mean, I know the Townsend's thing is like, well, he likes to sing the old songs. I like to write new stuff.
Yeah.
And then they are
and
doing the old stuff.
And everybody loves the new stuff. Yeah. I heard that the Eagles, ironically, fly separately. Like, they can't even stand. They have to go on stage from separate entrances. They can't even look at each other.
Oh, my God. That's weird, because the woman I spent the most years with in my life, if she hears Hotel California, she'll pull over the car and get out and walk around from it. She's so mad.
At the song?
She hates that the song is still on. She never liked it. She can't stand it. Anything to do with the Eagles. Now, I like Seven Bridges Road.
Oh, sure.
I do. It's a lot of it's a lot of harmony, and there's a lot to it. I understand, though, that the Eagles must hate each other for having written those songs.
I know a guy who was about to get a blowjob, and then Let Him In came on by Paul McCartney.
No.
And it was such a toe tapper, it broke the mood, and he didn't get a blowjob. And he hates Paul McCartney to this day. And if he sees Paul McCartney...
It's because of you she wouldn't eat meat.
Yeah, it's because of you I didn't get a blowjob at the Mendon Twin.
Yeah. You know, when he goes into concerts, my friend works at the Garden. It's not the Garden anymore. It's the, what do they call it? The North Bank Museum?
Vuzuvulon
Stadium. Something. I don't know what the hell they call it. I still call it the Garden. But he said when Paul McCartney comes into town, he removes, or has everything, I'm sure he doesn't do it himself, he has all meat removed from the facility. Entirely. We won't perform here if you sell hot dogs.
Ah.
So all of it comes out and they have to find alternative foods. And guess what? Alternative foods are available.
Weird. Lettuce.
Linda McCartney's Foods.
Oh, how strange.
Weird.
Yeah, a meal fit for a rabbit.
Yeah, but that's kind of an interesting thing that somebody could say, well, no, but I'm Paul McCartney. I don't want anything in the
stadium. Yeah, you can basically do it. You know who else hate each other?
Who's that?
David Lee Roth and Eddie Van Halen.
No, why is that?
Oh, they don't like each other.
They look like old women.
Well, yeah. David Lee Roth is turning into Mia Farrow.
With the kids?
And Eddie Van Halen is turning into the old guy from the Dukes of Hazzard.
I seriously thought he was my aunt for just a minute. I looked and I went, is that my... Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's weird.
David Lee Roth is turning into Grandpa Duke or whoever that was from the Dukes of Hazzard. Denver Pyle was the actor's name. That's all I know. I can see it on the screen.
AC/DC. Bear. Did you know that they're back?
AC/DC?
I never knew how shot they were.
Oh, are they tiny?
Oh, my God. They're all wearing the tall shoes, and they're still short.
Pete Townsend is only 5'9".
Is that true?
But people think he's giant because Roger Daltrey is like 5'4".
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of famous people that had big heads but small bodies.
Oh, yeah.
It's a ton of them.
I saw Rob Lowe once.
Is he the same?
Yeah, he looks like a lollipop. He looks like a blow pop. He's got this massive head.
And Michael, the kid with the family ties.
Yeah.
What's his name?
A train wreck. You can't talk about him.
No. He's a nice person and all, but I'm saying he always had a big head, too.
Giant head.
Yeah, big head. A lot of newscasters.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, John Stewart said Ted Kennedy's head looks like a container for a head. I thought that was the perfect. That was the perfect.
As I've said in many great places across this great nation of ours, I can't find a hat.
I can't find a hat. I can't do no helmet. I cannot find.
They don't make hats for me.
Hat nor helmet.
I can't even find a helmet.
The Pixies are back. The Who is back. The X-Files is coming back.
Is that right?
Twin Peaks is coming
back.
Wait,
I didn't hear any of that.
Yeah, the X-Files is coming back.
I'm going to have to go back and watch the old ones.
Twin Peaks is coming back. Here's my theory. I don't think it's that everything is coming back. I think we're finally out of stuff.
That's what it is. We've run out of ideas. The audience has seen every idea ever thought of.
There's nothing new.
They're three steps ahead of you. So the only thing you can do is the Charlie Kaufman thing of like throw up the 52 cards of your movie in the air, see where they land, and print that.
Exactly. We're out of ideas. Yeah. It's
format change now.
Yeah.
We'll start with the end, we'll go right to the middle, and we'll show them the beginning. They'll freak out.
Yeah. The big movies, James Bond, Star Wars. I thought James Bond was going to be
that guy Luther, the kid who was on The Wire.
Daniel Craig.
But it's Daniel Craig, but I had heard all this. I don't understand. Was that like something, and then they went, you know what, no, don't do it. Did anyone even realize he's Bond?
He's only made three movies. Give him a fucking break. See, everybody has such a hard-on for new.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's like Spider-Man. Spider-Man was good, and they only made three movies. No, we need a new Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And then they rebooted Spider-Man when people were just becoming aware that there was a Spider-Man.
Then
halfway through the second Spider-Man, they rebooted it again with a third Spider-Man.
And they fired the guy.
People have been with this guy for a half a movie. Yeah. We need a new guy.
And
they've got a James Bond thing. So immediately, no, we got to get a new guy. We got to get a new guy now. And then by the time Luther gets to the studio, he'll be thinking, we got to get a Chinese James Bond.
By then, it'll be like the guy who does Madea. He'll be
Tyler Perry's James Bond. It'll be his mother, Madea Bond, and she'll be like, I'm Bond, James
Tyler
Bond.
Perry will play the romantic woman lead interest for Bond.
He is America's leading Christian transvestite filmmaker.
There's no one like him.
There's only one. God bless him, there's only one. Yeah, but I think that's just that we're out of stuff.
Yeah, I think that really makes sense. I think the people that have been derivative ran out.
Yeah.
The derivatives ran out.
Yeah, now it's just it's remakes of reruns.
Has there ever been a band called The Derivatives, Johnny?
Let's start one now.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. I'll play drums.
Another thing, baseball.
I don't play drums, by the way.
Of course you can play drums.
I can bang on the drums. I'm not picking up a guitar and making a fool of myself.
Here's the thing about drums. Everybody can play drums.
Yeah, just not well.
Most people don't play them well.
Yeah.
But you literally, if you have hands, you can play drums.
Yeah, I love the Letterman story that he told towards the end there about how he went to Carson's house and they played a little tennis. They went in, they had a beverage. And then he said, oh, I want you to come out in the garage and watch me play the drums. And he just watched him play the drums for like an hour and a half, and Johnny was in his element.
And you got to start thinking, this is weird.
Right. At what solo of the drums do you run out of energy for this?
Yeah, but it's also, it's like when people are at your house, they say, I want to show you stuff. Oh, yeah, that's it. Right. Like when somebody else, like, I want to see my record collection.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, no. And you say, yes. And you're just in the room thinking, that's another record. That's another record.
Yeah, totally.
You want to see my collection of children's rain boots? No.
The really young Johnny Carson was not that funny. He was good.
He was a game show
host. He was presentational. He was good. He was kind. But he really learned how to listen. And even when he was on Letterman eating, like, what he would have, like, to eat the burger and make the rant kind of thing.
Sure.
But once he stopped listening to other people, I stopped wanting to listen to him.
I just remember him as looking like Mac Tonight, and then I stopped watching. Remember Mac Tonight?
Of course.
That was a great advertising campaign.
Great.
What if...
The face of the moon.
How do we get people to eat in our restaurant? What if he was a terrifying moon? What if he looked like the kind of a moon you would see in a nightmare that you would wake up as he was pulling your pajamas down? And you'd wake up and have to run in the bathroom and cry over the toilet. He was horrifying.
The moon wore sunglasses,
He was horrifying.
That is so
He was
weird.
Like children abused in daycare centers would run screaming from the room when Mac Tonight would come on. You know what used to scare the fuck out of me when I was a kid?
What's that?
When people would draw a face on their own face upside down.
Oh, yeah, that's
so your
never
lower
good.
Teeth were your upper teeth.
I still hate that.
Oh, my God. That drove me
insane.
It's
like a cement mixer dream.
Oh.
You just don't want it. You just don't want it. I don't want this.
Why,
how did I get here? I don't want this.
Dream.
Yeah, why did they do the same thing with the people that their whole heads, but then they use their hands to present the body, but the body's only a foot high.
People with puppet bodies.
Puppet
the word.
Bodies go right along with babies that say things before they could say it.
Oh. There's certain things.
That gives me hives.
There's certain things that give me hives. Babies talking with an adult voice.
Yeah, or just their lips moving like a freaking lion or something weird, or a horse. It's like Mr. Ed.
Yep, people with fake bodies.
Baby Ed.
People with fake bodies. When people in cartoons lose their clothes and they have to wear a barrel. Barrels are much more expensive than
Johnny,
clothes.
Seriously, if you and I put on a barrel each and went down to Dunkin' Donuts to get a, whatever, what you get the almond milk now because you can't have dairy, right? But if we went down
there.
No,
I can't have dairy.
You can't. I can't really either. You bring your own almond milk because they don't have it there, right?
No, you don't enjoy anything.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, you no longer enjoy food, and that's the world's way of saying you're alive past your date.
But I've heard you ask them 10 times, do you have almond milk? And I know you're trying to influence them to get it.
Yeah, they won't get it.
But they won't get it. But if we walk in
there. I'm just trying not to shit myself in the truck. I'm not trying to put on airs or nothing.
I appreciate it right now more than I ever have.
My body is slowly dying.
But if we walked into D&D with a couple of barrels on and you said, do you have almond milk? I think we'd get a much different reaction.
They'd find some.
Yeah, I think they'd get some for us.
Here's what I want to know. For the amount of money you spend on a barrel and then have to pay to have suspenders riveted into it, you could buy a wardrobe of clothes at the Gap. I mean, the Gap is basically the paper towels of clothes.
You know why
you use it one time good, then you wash it, and it falls apart.
You know why those went away, though? Shoulder bruises.
Shoulder bruises. Very hot on the collarbone.
Very hot on your collarbone all across.
Once you break your collarbone, it haunts you for the rest of your life.
I seen a kid at that Pixie show. He had Dick epaulets tattooed down his shoulder blades.
Oh, right, Jesus.
So then he cut his shirt so he could see him. He's got balls and penis caps on his neck. Goes all the way down to his shoulders. Mm-hmm. It's an image you don't want. I'm sorry.
Whenever
about
I see somebody like with rivets in their face, he's like, all right, your parents are hurt.
You know what, though? There's those kids that are like on the off ramp when you're pulling off. And all I can think is that most of them are trying to get as close to their house as they can so they can see. See what you did to me?
These people that are overly pierced, when you walk, you should not sound like somebody dropped a silverware drawer down a concrete stairwell.
But I like the kids who've taken the plugs out. Earlier on, they got them. Now they're out, and they look like they have been shot twice, and they got very lucky that it missed the head. How did that happen?
I just imagine the people who work at the metal detector at the airport all day, they're just like, tits. Vagina, tits, vagina, got a thing in his dick, curly thing in her vagina.
Would you in a million years, say you went home and your mother had plugs. Someone talked her into it. She went to the beauty place, got her hair done.
What do you mean,
got plugs? They put these plugs in their ears now. You haven't seen this?
No.
So it's not an earring. It's like a big round thing.
Oh, and they blow out their earlobe. Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about.
And then the rest of your
life. The kid at D&D, the one we go to, and then you took them out. Because he realizes, like, oh, this isn't going to last forever. And he's just got these dangling huge holes in his ears.
Yeah, now his ears look like the Octomom's twat.
Yeah, it's weird. What do you say to someone like that? You can't help but look at it. They know you're looking at it. You just go, can I get a coffee?
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say to the guy. I don't want to say, hey, that's a weird decision. You should go back and change.
People whose earlobes look like a deflated bike in a tube. People with tattoos on their face. You don't see a lot of them hired in the planning department.
I like when it goes right to the edge of their neck.
Yeah.
And then they got the collar and they're good.
Yeah.
Two different lives.
Oh, you fooled me.
Yeah, two different lives. I know. I don't see the ink peeking up.
But what's amazing, these people that get tattooed right up to the base of their chin, so they're really thinking, not the face, not the face. Like at this point, it's going to matter.
There's people that run out of room and you can tell. It's like the guy who starts injecting heroin into his toe. He's like, I got no room left here.
I'm done.
But I gotta get Mickey on here somewhere. Could you put Mickey on the bottom of my elbow where it hurts the most? Like, I don't know what they go through, but at the end, you're like, oh, the canvas is covered.
Well, it's like a doodle pad. And the whole thing is when you're done a doodle pad, when you fill up the paper, you just rip it off, throw it in the garbage, and then you get a new piece of paper. You can't do that with your skin, buddy.
When we were kids, if they had all been doing this, I still wouldn't have done it. I'm so scared of needles.
I have people like, I gotta get a tattoo. I'm like that with ice cream cake. I could eat a whole ice cream, but I don't.
I know it would be good.
And then it would be great. And then I would hate myself.
That's the thing they don't remember, the part about it where it wouldn't be good.
How do you know when you're done in the shower if you can't see your skin?
And the kid who's 18 and gets plugs put in and now his ears look like deflated tires and now he's 50. Who can he even talk to?
Oh, Lord. When you're totally covered in tattoos, people are not aware of the decrease in bone density over time.
I've heard it actually affects your chakras. Well, you know what that is?
Oh, I do.
Yeah, it's weird.
I didn't know it was real. That's like
because they say that you're blocking your body's energetic flow.
Oh, I could have told her that.
Well, yeah, not that's really. What I'm saying.
I wouldn't have known what I was talking about, but I would have said it.
That's why my mother used when she told me not to get one, even though I never would have got one. I knew it made her nervous, so I'd be like, I don't know, Ma, what do you think if I got like an M for McDonald's on my arm just to piss her off and make her worried? She was absolutely, why would you get a corporate symbol?
I bet you could call McDonald's.
And they'd do it?
And say, how much will you pay me to get your logo on my body?
They'd say, who are you?
You'd find somebody. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I'm a homeless guy that likes to take a piss.
Let me look at your social profile.
That would be great. You pay McDonald's to get their logo on your back, and then you park yourself in the
Burger King parking lot.
Median strip of the turnpike with your shirt off. Taking a dump.
And now, if your name's Bill, you're literally a billboard.
You're literally a billboard. You are. Nice.
That's good, right?
They call him Bill Walking Billboards.
He's Walking Billboard. But that's his last name.
As you get older, your skeleton shrinks. You become shorter. Your skin sags.
Yeah, this is going to be fun.
All of these tattooed people, eventually, in like 30 or 40 years, our retirement homes are going to look like a bunch of clowns that got stuck outside in the rain.
With shrinky dinks.
Yeah, everybody's going to look like Jackson Pollock's drop cloth.
Do you remember shrinky dinks?
Of course.
That's what a tattoo looked. It's like, originally it was this big, then now 40 years later, oh, it's like a little representation of the thing
exactly.
They originally drew.
Shrinky
the colors are darker and closer.
Shrunken head apple sculpture was the best toy based on the premise that fruit rots.
What's the strangest tattoo in Boston that you've seen?
The strangest tattoo I ever saw was the cover of Journey's Escape. Remember the spaceship that looked like a stink bug flying out of the other spaceship? And I'm like, so how'd you get that? And he goes, I love that album.
Oh,
like, I love cheeseburgers, pal. Yeah,
I don't have it on my shoulder.
I had to nail one into my arm.
To let you know I love them.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
what
that's
the
weird.
Fuck is wrong with people?
I saw a girl who had a Supertramp stamp.
Oh.
That's my favorite thing I've ever seen. And like that was actually kind of good.
Send
the only
message.
Thing was.
Was it the woman holding?
Yes.
Okay. Or was it just the words?
No, it was the
woman. That might have been put on by her owner.
However, it was just about an inch and a half off from the center. And I'm not going to tell her.
One of the big plastic surgery procedures in the future is going to be finding a way to hoist tramp stamps back up above the waistline. Because as you get older, your skeleton shrinks.
I need a tramp stamp lift.
And they will sink below the waist of your pants like the sun sinking into the ocean.
Well, this girl wasn't somebody I was with. Like, it wasn't a romantic interest. It was literally somebody who was so proud of their new tattoo that they're literally, like, lifting their back up at Ralph's to show everyone.
And it's Shane in the 40s. Is like, what is that tattoo? Oh, that's the SS Indianapolis.
Yeah,
I fought
exactly.
on that in the war. What's that tattoo? Oh, this is a band. I saw their concert once. I liked them.
Yeah, they're called the Squeezies.
They broke up, but they were nice. My brother knew the guy.
I really liked the drum solo in the third song in the first album.
So I got them tattooed.
So I tattooed it on me.
Yeah.
It is weird.
What's that? This is a devil dog. I had one on my way to a movie I liked.
If you were going to tattoo an album on your body, Johnny, what would that album be?
It would be the White Album, and no one would know.
Perfect. Political Talk with Two Guys from Boston.
Settle back now, content, comfortable, well-fed, and ready for some fine entertainment. Is everybody happy? Then let's go. It's showtime.
I don't know if I'm getting smarter or older, but I just hate everything.
You know what? Me too. And that's a danger. I think it's dangerous.
Yeah. You? But it's also, it's like, you know, the election. It's like, this again.
Exactly.
That's how they get you.
I'm totally uninterested, you know, except, I guess, like everybody. Well, this Trump guy is so kind of.
I do find that there is a law of political gravity that eventually. Everything like these, and I think it's just because you can't, specifically to politics, you can't lie to people that much for that long without it some under that level of scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
Now you could get into the White House. I mean, the you know the example that you know is like George W. Bush, and you know it's like it took a long time, but eventually the fact that he was completely incapable. Came out, the country is still paying the price for it.
Yeah,
or Nixon, too. It was like, you know, it's like the more common example.
Nixon was a lot smarter than
No, he was brilliant, but he was also
sweatier,
amoral. And, and I think the best example is Sarah Palin, like where she was just like, she's gonna be it.
The bikini and the machine gun.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Did she didn't pose like that, did she?
Well, it wasn't. It wasn't. And this is not to be confused with the excellent Cramps poster, Bikini Girls with Machine Guns.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Where Poison Ivy posed with a machine gun.
Right.
Which is phenomenal.
Right.
But no, that was that chick in the red, white, and blue bikini with a machine gun that put Sarah Palin's head over.
Right.
Yeah.
But it couldn't have fit better.
Couldn't have fit better. And but she just didn't have the chops. And eventually it was shown. And look what she has done with her life then. I mean, she... Her
what has she done with her life? I know her kids are constantly getting
people have
fucked.
That's all I know about that family.
Yeah, everyone's always fucking their children.
Yes.
What I find interesting is she has a very specific sort of mindset, which is she is always the victim of somebody trying to get her. And when she was running against Obama...
She's always the victim.
People loved her because, like the people love Donald Trump, they feel like they're being victimized. You know, people understand us the right way. I mean, for all of its strutting machismo, a lot of that super hyper conservatism is poor us, nobody gives us a. In the campaign, once it became her in the campaign, then the campaign was oppressing her. Like, she was in the Republican Party. She was in the Republican Party and she rebelled against the Republican Party in Alaska, and that's how she became. Level as a maverick. Then she got into the campaign with John McCain and suddenly was her in the campaign. Well, now the campaign is the enemy. So she would not do anything she was asked to do in the campaign. Then she went to Fox News and Roger Ailes was her enemy.
Oh, did she go to Fox News and get fired? She got kicked off already?
She's been kicked off of Fox News because she has to rebel against whoever is...
That's her shtick.
Yeah. She's a scrapper.
Yeah. Yeah, but now she's on, like, you know, Finger One Online News. Yeah.
No, she's
yeah.
She's got a, yeah. You know what it is, though, about what you just said or said earlier is, oh, this again, it's time for the election again. That's why 4 years is brilliant of a space of time.
Yeah, because you forget.
Because it's long enough that you forget.
Yeah.
But it's quick enough that you're like, you're still apathetic. You're like, oh, the election
again. Well, no, you know what it is? Yeah, you forget, and you're like, okay, you get a little excited, but then you see it a couple of times, and you're like, oh, this shit again.
Yeah.
Because it's a playbook.
Yeah.
It's just a fucking playbook at this point. It's all formula, you know?
Yeah. Like, part of me really wants to go, like, I hope Trump wins, just so these people...
We deserve it!
Yeah, and just so these people can get their assholes cored like a candy apple, but they will never understand it. They will never understand it. You know, if Trump got elected and people got fucked, they would blame Obama.
Right. It wouldn't be Trump's fault.
Or whoever.
Legacy he's inheriring, you mean?
Yeah. But it was also, it's like, you know, there was a time during the first Bush administration where the Republicans ran every branch of government. There is a 5-4 conservative majority in the Supreme Court. And for the first, I don't know, like middle 4 or 5 years of the Bush presidency, the Republicans had the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, and the White House.
Jeez.
And they were furious.
Right.
you know, it was like the fact that there were people alive that disagreed with them drove them bananas. Yeah.
Liberals that planned 9/11.
They'll never ever. And then, you know, the crazy left wingers that say it was Bush did it, and I knew Bush wasn't involved because 9/11 was, if nothing else, a successful mission.
Right.
had the planes missed both towers and made safe landings near a marshmallow factory, I would have thought, Bush!
Tell me if you think I'm crazy for saying this, but they certainly didn't mind that it was done because it sure implemented a lot of their... Yeah.
They were like,
here we go, boys!
Yeah, they were certainly
Iraq, yes!
Yeah, they were certainly able to capitalize on some plans.
Absolutely! It was their Gulf of Tonkin. It was their the Maine. Remember the Gulf of Tonkin
was the great analogy of, I believe, it was found out to be porpoises.
You're right.
What was the Gulf of Tonkin thing again?
A U.S. naval ship was being fired upon by the North Vietnamese in the Gulf of Tonkin, and that's basically what spurred the big escalation of the Vietnam War under Johnson.
And it turned out to be they weren't fired on.
No, they were porpoises.
They were farts. They were porpoise farts.
And I believe it
was a burrito dinner.
And the naval admiral in charge of the Gulf of Tonkin, Jim Morrison's father.
No way.
Yep.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wait, he must have had conflicting feelings about Jim's career.
God, do you have to be the Lizard King?
Well,
let's take it. No, I don't, you know.
That's really a great conversation. It's really interesting because he said, like, my parents are dead. Like, if you look at all the
Morrison?
All the, yeah, he was like, my parents are dead. My family's dead. Like, that. None of that was ever.
Dead to him?
That's just what he said at the height of his fame. And, like, I don't think any of that stuff came out until years later.
Wow. Oh, like, he didn't want to talk about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. His
dad was a big career. Like,
Father,
Navy.
I want to kill you. Mother, I want to fuck you. That's my boy. That's my boy. But I did see an interview with him where he goes, well, I thought Jim was a good entertainer. I didn't think he was a good singer.
He wasn't
a good singer. And you kind of
parents,
like, yeah,
after you've
right.
been in the business for a while, you know, when they know
Steve Lawrence, he can sing.
Yeah. He can hold a tune.
That's one of the greatest, like, it's a funny bit, and I can never come up with a way, with an introduction to do it on stage other than, this is a funny idea.
Who's what?
Which is that
That's my whole act.
The song Riders of the Storm.
Yeah.
It fits perfectly for Fred Schneider's way of singing from the B-52s. There's a killer on the road. His brain is squirming like a toad. Hey there, toad. Get out of that road. Like, it's a perfect... Riders on the Storm is like a perfect B-52s song, but there's really no way to set it up. That's it.
You just opened up a whole new world to me.
Yeah, but just the impersonation's funny though.
But I want
just Fred Schneider singing Doors songs.
Were you into the Doors? And where'd you go to high school?
I love
LaSalle Academy, Providence, Rhode Island.
Oh, you're from the biggest little state in the union.
That's right.
That's right. Nancy Ann Cianci.
You can't petition the Lord with prayer.
You can't petition the Lord with prayer.
Who is this? You're losing me.
It's all Jim Morrison.
Doors.
Oh, well, that I know. Yeah.
Let's swim to the moon. Let's climb neath the tide, the crazy tide. Yeah, it just goes
Nancy Ann Cianci was the
daughter of Buddy Cianci, the mayor, governor?
Mayor. I always
the mayor
that.
Of Providence, later went to jail and then became...
Well, he didn't go to jail the first time, but he was on suspension. Like, he didn't serve any time.
This is a guy that gave Whitey Bulger the creeps.
This guy...
This guy beat
the shit out of his ex-wife's boyfriend. He was all mobbed up and, like, bashed the guy's head against a fireplace.
This is the mayor?
So he was the mayor in the early 80s, right?
Okay.
Then doesn't serve any time. So he's not a felon during the 80s, but he couldn't run for mayor for, like, a decade. As soon as the 10 years was up, he ran for mayor and won. By a landslide.
Yeah. And won.
Won. And then cleaned up Providence. To his credit, him and his mob buddies turned it from a dying mill town into a thriving little, you know, southern New England metropolis.
Is that right?
Yep. And then they got him on, like, he was brought up on, like, 96 counts of racketeering and all
after,
that. After.
Later?
Yeah.
Then he finally serves time.
Buddy Cianci.
And then... Providence goes down the tubes.
Mm-hmm.
Like they
after
got
he's
the,
gone?
Oh, my God. It, like, that city collapsed way before 08 and everything was gone. There's Bloods and Crips in Providence.
Really?
Providence? There's don't walk alone in downtown Providence anymore.
Is it a shitty city right now?
It's in bad shape, real bad shape. And all the cool music venues got closed down. Ooh. And, yeah, bad scene.
Yep.
Because it's coastal.
You know, Ard
stuff.
Marine,
is she from there?
She is from Compton, Rhode Island.
Little Compton.
Little Compton, Rhode Island.
Straight out of Little Compton. We just saw my uncle and his wife. I literally haven't seen them in over a decade. Him and my father and his brother had a falling out.
Oh, Jesus.
After
sounds like my
died.
Family. I ain't talking to Aunt Lena.
Oh, after the mother
no,
was-
Lena wants Evie's money. That's what's going
That's
on.
That's what it was. It was about money, wasn't it?
Yep. About the house.
Oh, is that right?
Yep. about the money of the house. When it, and this is even before Nana dies. They're like arguing about what, how they're going to split up the cash.
Yeah.
And then
are there ever, is it ever not about money? Is it ever about like she wanted to be cremated. She wanted me to make a wind chime of a skeleton and hang it up at the church.
Arden grew up on the like on the next street. My cousins, all three of them babysat for her.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Is that crazy or what?
That is crazy.
You made me think of my buddy from college. Their great uncle was Houdini.
Shut the front door.
And then that's how his mother and her sister had a huge falling out. She came by one day and said, oh, we just want to grab a few things from the attic. She took all the Houdini stuff.
Whoa.
Just came by and grabbed it while no one was looking.
Oh, my God. Their uncle was Houdini.
I guess so. It must have been their uncle or at least their mother's.
And who had the Houdini stuff?
His mother had a bunch of Houdini stuff in the attic.
I know that one of the ways that he would get out of stuff and is he had like bridge work and he would put like the key up in the bridge work.
That's like James Bond shit.
Yeah, and then he would like.
Really? And remove the bridge.
Yeah, or he could also like swallow the key and then burp it up. And then it was all tricks. It's perfect summing up of Houdini. It's all amazing. Tricks. Swallow. It wasn't real magic. It's just tricks.
It turns out it was bullshit.
You sound like Trump there. Let me tell you something about Houdini. Those are tricks.
It's all bullshit. I'm going to be better than... Yeah. I'm going to be Houdini. I'm going to do tricks so your head's going to spin. When I get in there, the Houdini tricks I do, it's amazing. People love me. Beautiful narcissism because the highest compliment he can pay to somebody is that they love him. He loves me.
God, that is so right.
You know, he does do that, doesn't he?
Yeah, they love me. They love me. And it's amazing.
They love me.
Yeah. The ISIS, there'll be no more. When I'm elected, there'll be no problem with ISIS because they love me.
He said that. I could see him saying that.
But it is. There's no more rain when I get in. Unless you need rain, then it's going to rain. Otherwise, there's no rain. People go, all right.
We'll make it rain in the West. What are we, idiots? That's his thing. We can see the clouds. Come on. Who can't see the cloud?
You can't see the cloud. You don't need to see the clouds. I'll just tell them rain. It's going to be, you'll see. And it's a, you'll see.
You'll see. Ma'am, come up here. Feel this cloud. It's real.
I was working on a bit now about the, I don't usually use the word midget, but you have to say it if you're following it with the word tossing. You can't say little person tossing because you're like, well, they just shouldn't throw them. But but I was thinking about the midget tossing scene in Wolf of Wall Street and what that must have been like for that guy.
Is that the movie where Leonardo DiCaprio yells a lot?
No, you're thinking of a different one.
That's the 3-hour one where he yells a lot. Yeah, but that must have been so sad when like the agent was like, hey, we got you a role in a Scorsese movie. Yeah, and then he shows up like, put on the Velcro helmet.
Right.
The Sly Stone song, Stand, has a lyric. One of the lyrics is, there's a midget standing tall and a giant beside him about to fall.
Wow.
You couldn't do that now.
You know,
and it's like, well, he's a midget standing tall. It's like, that's like, okay, so what? Is he supposed to be ashamed of himself?
What is going on in this song? Shouldn't he get out of the way? He might die.
Yeah. It's going to be a Timber moment. When you go back and you listen to like China Girl and stuff, you're just like,
Yeah, things have changed so.
Yeah.
Things have changed so. Oh, you know, it's so. My daughters are from China and we have a lot of video and we had a video company edit, like, here's 4 hours of our trip to China. Can you edit this into like cohesive 2 hours?
Right.
And they put China Girl.
No!
Then I had to take it back and went, take this off.
Yeah, what? Why would they think that's... No.
It's amazing.
So they replaced it with the Mulan soundtrack.
Yeah. Oddly, in China... My oldest daughter, she watched Mulan the whole time. It was her favorite movie. That is a famous legend in China.
Yeah.
I said, this is not a joke, because we came to know these people very well. We went several times. It was the same team of people, same organization, the same group.
Yeah, yeah.
So I said, who's General Tsao?
Yeah.
And like, what do you mean?
What's the
and
thing?
They go like, General Tsao's chicken is a famous dish in America, and they're like, No,
he's not a guy.
Not there. A guy. And what we think of as Chinese food here is not there.
To be fair, what if somebody came over here and was like, who's Colonel Sanders?
Yeah, he's a legendary military leader. But what's amazing is that what we think of as Chinese food is actually food that the Chinese people that were built the railroad, what they ate, and they only had what was available. So right. They're like
so
chicken
it's like
and
made
broccoli.
With their, like, limited ingredients.
So like, yeah. So it's like, because over in China, it's just a lot of stuff in the head on.
Yeah, but they had to change.
That makes perfect sense.
They had to change some of the names because no one was going to eat oppression sauce.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll have some of the white slavery sauce with
that. Yeah, totally.
But so what, you're really into professional wrestling. Now, did you get into professional wrestling through your love of the Hulk, or did you get into comic books through your love of the Hulk?
Hey!
Come on!
I was into comic books first, and then when I saw the Ultimate Warrior, who was a superhero.
Totally.
Professional wrestling superhero, Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it was like radioactive spider powers, cocaine-based wrestling powers. Same difference, you know? Captain America takes a serum that makes him faster and stronger. Wrestling.
yeah.
When we never see the needles marks in his ass. I was definitely...
I always found Captain America unnecessarily jingoistic.
I mean, there are some awful covers with him in the 40s. Yeah.
Yes, I know.
But it was of the time.
Well, there's a line, you know, you talk about how quickly things have changed. I always recommend the John Wayne classic, The Fighting Seabees. Now, Seabees were engineers that would go into islands and clear forests and build forward stations. And John Wayne has a line in The Fighting Seabees where he says, "We're going to put an airstrip on this island. And if Tojo and his bug-eyed monkeys want to fight us, they can deal with the Fighting Seabees."
No.
See, it proves that even back then, some scenes were improvised.
Tojo and his...
Before Apatow, people were still...
Well, Jane Lynch is in that movie. Now, when you were in high school,
right,
in Rhode Island,
mm-hmm,
were you into the Doors?
Yeah, I mean, college is when it really hit the fan.
Uh-huh.
But I love the Doors. You know what it was? It's because that movie came out a few years before.
Yep.
I started high school in 93, so then that movie would have come out while I was in junior high.
Yeah, 90 or 91.
So the movie spurred the interest in the Doors?
Well,
that's how old I am. I had the real Doors.
Yeah, exactly.
You had the real Doors. Now, what was... And I was wondering, because the Doors were somebody like... In high school, if you're an American high school student,
mm-hmm,
and you're white,
mm-hmm,
you have to be into the Doors at a certain... aspect of that music that really appeals to the onset of the flooding of testosterone into your system.
Well, but I would also put up...
Rock and roll, man.
Because my brother, I think, is your age, Dana. And so...
A million and six.
A million and seven.
Uh-huh.
He... I feel like his high school class got into the Doors because of the movie The Lost Boys.
Well, the thing that brought the Doors back into the mainstream in the late 70s, early 80s was Apocalypse Now.
Oh, right.
Because you are right,
the
sir.
The end was the opening of that movie. And they said, like, Francis Ford Coppola knew Jim Morrison at USC, and they were friends. Oh. And then I saw this in the Apocalypse Now documentary. Francis Ford Coppola goes, I mean, I kind of knew him. We weren't friends. I just thought it was funny to have a movie that started with a song called The End.
No way. Because yeah,
that's the only thing.
I was smoking.
I just thought it was funny.
I was smoking weed back then, and that was such a powerful fucking opening to me, like a hell. I was in one of those paranoid weed heads going, holy shit. That was a good movie.
Yeah, but he just put it in because he thought it was funny. And then that happened. That was a hit. That got that album.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then they Elektra released The Doors' Greatest Hits. Like, oh, we can. That became a huge hit. It's like,
and
that was when he was on the cover of Rolling Stone. He's hot. He's sexy. Right. He's dead.
And do you remember the episode of Family Ties where Michael J. Fox's best friend dies?
No,
it's a fantastic
Wait a
episode.
Minute,
I like that. I automatically
it has nothing to do with the conversation we're having. But I just thought of
it.
This.
Does because they were him and his buddy were into the Doors. Oh, it's a great episode. It like turns into a play where then he's talking to a psychiatrist for the last half of the episode, and it turns into like this one man play where then he's
there. Are you serious?
It's incredible TV.
Never saw Family.
He starts acting out moments from his life.
Really?
But it's almost it's not done in one camera shot, but it's done like a play.
It sounds awful. It sounds like
you'd
a very
love it.
It sounds like a very special Family Ties.
You'd you know?
It is. I'm in the generation that got into Queen because of Wayne's World, the movie.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah, shit see, like I remember Queen when I was in high school, junior high school. Huge.
Yeah, okay.
Never put together that Freddie Mercury was gay.
Me neither.
And the band is called Queen.
And they're called
Queen. You
don't mean
what
is the
either.
What is the deal with that guy in the bike shorts with the giant Tom of Finland mustache prancing around in a band called Queen? Confirmed bachelor.
He's available, ladies.
What do Paul Lynde and Charles Nelson Reilly have in common? They love ascots. and nothing else. It's amazing. It was just like it never occurred to us.
Well,
like,
what's really funny now is you look back, I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but the singer for Judas Priest.
Oh, yeah, that dude. I know who you're talking about.
Rob Halford, thank you.
That was podcast producer Jeff Fox coming in without a mic.
Coming in hot
without a mic, Rob Halford.
Because that's one of those things where you look back now and you're like, oh my, how obvious is it? He's prancing around in biker
He's
outfits.
He's a leather daddy.
He's a leather daddy, yeah, exactly. Right.
And then you never, well, I remember when Rock Hudson had AIDS, it was just, what?
But it was never discussed. What? That was the thing. It was never talked about.
It was literally
about.
Came out like the day he died. People were like, Rock Hudson was gay?
No way.
Even when if you remember when Liberace died of AIDS, it was because of his, quote, watermelon diet. Remember
that?
Oh,
no,
that? He lost weight because he was on an all watermelon diet.
Shut up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good PR.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I imagine. And now.
I eat watermelon. I'm fucking fat.
Yeah, I know. But now it's like in the past like 5 years, you used to be able to make fun of homosexuals. I mean, that was in the 70s and 80s, that was common. Like, you know, you watch these old Johnny Carson monologues.
Oh,
like,
he did.
A couple of guys. Back when Bruce was a derogatory name for a gay guy, a couple of guys named Bruce. You know, that was like...
Was that why the Python sketch, or that had nothing to do with that?
No, that
was Australian, right?
Okay. But yeah, if you listen to these old Carson things, a couple of guys named Bruce. Yes.
Well, it's like on Thanksgiving when they play Alice's Restaurant.
What is an Alice's Restaurant? I don't even
know. He says it in that when he's like, he's telling him to get out of the draft, go in and sing. Like if one
Go say you're a faggot?
If one of you sings a chorus from Alice's Restaurant, they'll think he's really sick and not take him. If two of them go in, they think they're both faggots and not take either of them.
Oh, do they say that?
That's exactly what Arlo says. That noted liberal.
He's a big liberal, yeah.
Yeah, no, it is amazing. And then, so you could make fun of gay people and people, you know what, you're right, 100th monkey syndrome, everybody comes at the same realization at the same time. That's not cool. But you could talk about how homophobic you were. That was that was like, you know, if you drop your wallet, what do you do when you drop your wallet in San Francisco? Kick it to Oakland. You know, it was like the entire movie Raw. Yeah. Is all about how terrified Eddie Murphy is of homosexuals.
Oh, yeah.
You know, was okay. And then it was only recently that people go, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was only very recently that people go, you can't do that either. And these things change over time, but the window of time is becoming smaller and smaller. Long after you couldn't openly mock gay people in comedy, you could do an hour on being afraid of them.
Yeah.
Like Raw is an hour and 10 minutes of a guy being afraid of gay people.
Yeah.
And the old were like, you know, like, hey, if you drop your wallet in San Francisco.
Yes. Like
the old joke was like going to prison. Don't drop the soap, which implies that people don't have knees. Like, what happened? You bend at the knee and you pick up the soap.
Well, you know how much of it is the internet in a positive way that made everyone be able to have voices and, you know, have like shared experiences.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, think that's a lot of it, which is great.
Yeah. The lightning speed with which the transgendered community has entered mainstream culture. And
someone wants their podcast blogged.
And, well, this will be the one positive transgendered blog that's ever mentioned my name.
Oh, you'll fuck up in some way.
Yeah, I will soon. Yeah.
See, I just did.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're animals. Oh, my God. They're all animals. But the way they've entered mainstream culture and demanded to be treated equally, and people said, okay. The Caitlyn Jenner thing is astounding because he was the symbol of, like, there was a time in the late 70s when Bruce Jenner was the symbol of, like, the dominant American male. He was this amazing athlete. He was on the cover of the goddamn Wheaties box.
Right.
And, yeah, no, it's a really
And now amazing. We've accepted her as a woman and a murderer. And I think that it's...
As I've said, now we get to give Caitlyn Jenner all the privacy and dignity that her family is so famous right. for craving.
She got $5 million for the show that she's doing now.
Well, I've often said she is the spokesman for the transgendered people of infinite wealth everywhere.
Spokeswoman.
Yeah, very good.
Bringing this full circle, it's interesting, though, that the internet now, I think that it's responsible for your daughters potentially having a way easier time in middle school than we did, but also potentially the worst time. Because yeah. it's like kids now know, like, yeah, don't call people fags. Don't right. make fun of transgender people. Like, the internet has kind of made that information more readily available. But then at the same time, it's like, if you do get targeted, yeah, you're going to have a hashtag, don't come to Mike's party. And that's going to be the worst. So it's weird how it splits it down the middle.
Yeah. And I often want to know, like, were there as many crazy shootings as there are now? Are they just being reported more? Because the other thing we didn't used to have is news on 24 of hours course. A day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I just
I
wonder
don't remember ever hearing
how much
about...
have things changed and how much is it you just don't hear about it?
The idea of a kid coming to school with a gun when I was in school was like, I'd never heard of such a thing.
I
ever,
think you mean
ever.
A Second Amendment loving American coming to school.
Sorry, I apologize for offending that child.
There was one or two shootings before Columbine, but that changed everything. And I was in high school when Columbine happened, and it was insane. And I joke about this, but there were basically like nerd internment camps at yeah. like schools of like, the minute, like, every different kid was singled out. I had people, like, pushing me against lockers going, you ain't going to shoot us, are you?
Which, by the way,
well, if you keep doing this, I'll give it some fun.
Isn't that the exact opposite strategy? Like, wouldn't you think the next day after Columbine, everybody would be coming up to you being like, let's be best friends, you're
buddy!
The greatest.
But
like,
the thing is,
I've always liked you, buddy.
You knew that if you did say anything suspicious, then they would immediately report you. I mean, this is one of the most shameful moments, but I was, like, in my literary club. I was the vice president. I did poetry before stand-up 4 years.
Sure.
You I must have gotten so much pussy.
No, but I was called it a lot.
I'm sorry, that's what I meant.
And they went through my bag, and I just remember going, oh no, my poems!
Nice.
Please
nice.
Tell me you pronounce them poems. Poems. My poems!
My palms.
My poems!
Yeah.
As in World According to Garp, my stories!
You're super into Morrissey.
Mm-hmm.
And were you able to find other kids that were where you lived? Or because that's the big difference with the internet. Right now, like, you could immediately find everyone
exactly.
else who's into it.
Well, that's how I got into zines. Well, the one person in real life is my best friend to this day, Millie. Yes. And we became friends because I was wearing a Smith shirt and I was walking down the hall and she passed me in the hall and she was like, that's a cool shirt. And I was like, what? You know who you are? And we're best friends. We've been best friends for 21 years.
And this is in Atlanta?
This is in Atlanta. And she, yeah, I'm going to go hang out with her next weekend. She's the greatest. That was my only friend, like, as far as in school that knew who he was and was into him. But another reason I think I have such strong ties to Morrissey and the Smiths is because it kickstarted me doing zines.
Yeah.
Like, you were into comic books. I started doing zines when I was 14, and it was entirely because of Morrissey, because the first zine I bought was a Smiths fanzine. And so when I bought it, and it was photocopied and everything, I was totally like, I can do this. And then I started doing it, and at first I started trading with other people who did Smiths and Morrissey zines only. Then I started trading with more and more people who did different ones about music, and also poetry, and Riot Girl, and all this. So that became my entire life in high right. school. So he's also responsible for that.
He is, and it also gave you a social network.
Yes, exactly. So I started writing letters to people all over the world who were into him. So I would come home from school where no one knows who this guy is or cares and get 15 letters in my mailbox from people who did and who got it. And then I would sit and write them back. And so, yeah, that totally became my social circle. And then when I was old enough to drive and stuff, like I would go visit these people and I would have places to stay all over if I wanted to go see Morrissey, and people would come stay with me. And a lot of those people I know to this day. Yeah, until I became an adult, like until I started hanging out with people outside of a high school context, that I didn't find people that knew who he was and were into him.
Now, is that similar for you?
Well, I think it's different in the sense that it seems like her fandom is is as big as it's ever been.
And you're into something cool.
Yeah.
Which we are not.
That's debatable. That is debatable. Oh, and also, I'm a little older than you, so I think we didn't get the internet until my senior year.
Yeah.
My parents got AOL, and that was the very first time where I could actually, like, chat with people in chat rooms about them. So I did that, too.
See, the internet, like, messed with me, because I remember, like, one of the biggest things I was into was The Simpsons. And the first thing I remember ever looking up online was SNPP, Springfield Nuclear Power Plant website. And when they like you, you're good, Dave.
And I remember,
I remember reading these detailed reviews and seeing the production code numbers and references. They would explain every single reference. And I realized I will never be the fan that these people are, because I thought I was the biggest fan. Like,
the,
you know, I could like answer so much trivia. It was heartbreaking, but it was also freeing, because it felt like I didn't have to hold the torch.
Yeah, I understand that. You felt the same way Pete Townsend felt when he saw The Clash. It's like, I can relax. Someone else is going to carry on.
He just he just cradled a guitar. You'll get through this one. I don't have to hurt you anymore because I love me.
I'm not by any means the biggest Morrissey fan.
I, for years, thought I was the biggest Planet of the Apes fan. No, I'm not even close to many people.
There's some people that don't take the mask off.
There are people out there that they're all beautiful. I love them all, but they're just like, God damn it, you got me.
I'm totally the same. And as much as I love more, and I've just followed him and all that kind of stuff, like, there are some interviews where I'm like, you're a bonehead. Why did you say that? I do not agree with this guy on everything. Please believe it. The music comes first. I think he's a brilliant genius, but there are definitely times, especially when he talks about politics, where I'm like, what are you doing?
Well, it's also, which very interesting, is that you are a vegetarian, but you still kill animals. I think that's very interesting.
And she loves it when her friends become successful.
I do. That's the big difference between us.
Wow.
That was a deep reference. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I try. So, like, with comic books, like, I feel like I still love them, but, like, my series finale of, like, having to brag about being a comic book fan was, I went to San Diego this year for the first time ever.
Really? That is interesting.
I'd never been. Someone gave me tickets. Me and April got to open for Hardway.
Yeah,
it was cool. But I'll tell you, being there and seeing all these people that were into it, I don't need this as much. And it really made me appreciate all the other things that I've gotten along the way in my life outside of that obsession.
Yes.
Like, you know, my wife and comedy. Because there are people there that have nothing else.
Yeah.
And that is terrifying. And it's like, with nerd culture, like the whole thing with the internet of like, first, you know, like it's important to just make these claims. And then you get old enough and you realize they don't matter.
Yes.
You know, like one of the big things was like Hall H. Like that's like the bragging ground, that you got to see the Star Wars panel and the X-Men panel. But you have to wait 24 hours for it.
Oh my God.
And I don't like waiting 10 minutes at a diner to sit.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know what? I don't need this anymore.
Yeah.
I will pick and choose the parts of it that I want to. But otherwise, you know, and I saw Fantastic Four out of obligation, but that was it for me. And now I will not see all of these. I will not need to read about all of these. There's almost too much of it anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is the one thing. It's overwhelming. You can't keep up.
Yeah, and it's the same way with wrestling. Sometimes I'll watch it, and I don't have to all the time. It's cheesy, but I'm a fan of my wife more than I am of comic books now, and I'm a fan of comedy more than I am of that stuff. And that's great. It'll always be there.
Yeah. The things that I'm into, like Star Trek or apes or old horror movies,
yeah,
and, you know, Dark Shadows, whatever. Like, it's like it's my football or it's my corner bar.
Yeah.
It's like I can just, at the end of the week, I can watch Svengoolie.
Yeah.
You know, and for an hour and a half, I'm on the couch. I've seen the movie 50 times. I'm happy as a clam. So here's the thing about the Doors that I find fascinating, because I was, you know, in high school, super, super into the Doors. There's something about Jim Morrison that 14-year-old guys, like, yeah, that guy.
Right.
You know, and then you go to college, in my case, you go to college and you hear Elvis Costello and you go like, oh, I'm more that guy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
But Jim Morrison is one of the few musicians that, like, I got into for a period of time that, were I a musician, I would not have been like. Like, if I was a musician instead of a comedian, I would have been like Elvis Costello. Like, I would have been self-deprecating and funny and smart.
You keep your shirt on.
Keep your shirt on. I can envision I could envision myself being in the Beatles. Like, yeah, we're good. We're clever. We're kind of funny about it.
I'm Van Morrison.
Van Morrison, you can see. I can see myself in...
A little cantankerous.
I can see myself in The Clash. Like, yes, just angry.
Oh, yeah.
I can totally see that. But I cannot... But Morrison was the only guy, like, yeah, he's just like... He's not funny at all.
No.
Utterly humorless as a performer. Yeah. No irony. Utterly humorless.
Right.
Kind of a boring performer.
Well, you know what
if
happened?
If you watch The Doors
really?
At the Hollywood...
Really?
Watch The Doors at the Hollywood
Bowl. I thought that was
his
thing, that he was kind of an electric performer.
I think if you're there live, it's amazing. But if you watch, like, the videos of them on
He was really drunk and stoned.
Well, he was just...
A lot.
He was a ginormous alcoholic.
It was when I was in college, somebody said to me, he's not a genius, he's not a poet, he's just a drunk.
Yeah.
And then
that describes most of the world. I mean, most of the artists.
But if you read the story of that band, it's just like, oh, he was just an alcoholic.
Well,
like every single thing he's just an alcoholic. And I was really into him, and I made a movie.
You were really into him.
I was really into the Doors for a long time.
I liked their music, but I wasn't like Jim Morrison.
Yeah,
Their first album is a great album, and it is one of those albums like, you know.
I still like all their albums. That's just it.
Soft Parade.
Oh, really?
Soft Parade.
Sure.
What's on Soft Parade again?
I will say this. Robbie Krieger, painfully underrated guitarist.
See, that was my question.
And,
was
looks a lot like Cloris Leachman.
Did you? I would imagine you liked someone other than Morrison.
If you look at Robbie Krieger today, Robbie Krieger in The Doors looked like Stephen Wright as a rock star. Robbie Krieger today and Cloris Leachman, you can't tell apart. But I have to tell the story. Because it's too weird.
Yeah.
So I did this movie, a short movie, the show on Fox called The Sunday Comics. It was so I made a short movie for it that Troy Miller directed. Called Break On Through with JFK, and it was basically those two movies, Oliver Stone's movies from 90 and 91 or 91 and 92, put together is basically what if JFK was Jim Morrison. It was the Doors on stage, but with their front man was JFK. Is everybody in? Celebration is about to begin. It's online. I'm sure you can. It's called Break On Through with JFK. I'm 5 years old in it. I'm literally so young. So that aired on Fox.
Yeah.
I'm home at my house.
Oh, okay.
I lived in a house in Laurel Canyon.
Yeah.
Very close to where Jim Morrison lived.
Oh.
Behind the Laurel Canyon Country Store.
Yep.
I got a call on my answering machine, and I foolishly didn't save the cassette.
Who was it?
Hey, Dana. Ray Manzarek.
No.
Saw it. Somehow got my number from somebody at Fox.
He knows people.
Knows people. Thought it was funny. Loved it. Called me at home. I never called him back.
Could you?
I was terrified. I was terrified to call him. But he was very lovely. He was very lovely. And he was like, I don't think him and Oliver Stone get along well. And he's like, way to take it to Stone. Like, he was so sweet. And then...
You never called him back. Manzarek is like, Gould is a stuck up.
Oh, what a motherfucker. Bastard.
Ended up meeting him later at the Skirball Center. Both did a spoken word thing.
Cool.
And introduced to him. And I said, like,
that's
and
so
I told
cool.
him, like, you may not remember. He goes, yeah, no, I remember. Like, couldn't. And people forget, like, he produced the first two or three.
He was
the
guy.
He also produced the first two or three X albums. So, like, he's got real street cred. Long story longer. So he said, look, here's Jim's problem. He was an alcoholic. He was the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
Sweetheart of a guy.
Yeah.
Horrible when he was drunk. And it just got to the point where he was drunk more than he was sober.
Yep.
But he was a great guy. He was my friend. I love him. I miss him. Blah, blah, blah. But he was just like, Here's the end of the day. He was an alcoholic.
Right.
He goes on stage. Jim is a poet, man.
It is so funny.
Ray Manzarek. Ray Manzarek knew where his bread was buttered.
Wow. Yeah,
that's great.
He knew where his bread was buttered.
That is funny.
And there's another thing. Like, we used an episode. We used the Doors song in an episode of The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. And somehow Robbie Krieger was in charge of like the royalty fee, and he said, "Like, look, you can have it for free. Just put me in an episode." Because I love the show.
Oh, shit.
And there was like a 3-year period where every story we would be like at the end of it, can we get Robbie Krieger into this?
You couldn't get him in for three years?
We actually had him in an episode in the color of it. Like, we got it all the way. And then Mike Scully was running the show. He's just like, the show was long. He's like, we got to cut that Robbie Krieger.
Oh, shit.
That's the funniest thing ever.
And it was like, we
kept bumping Robbie Krieger.
We kept bumping Robbie Krieger. And like literally every story would be like, is there a way to get Robbie Krieger into this? Like, I can't see myself as him. Like, I would have been a better version of him. I would have been a funnier version of Jim Morrison.
Yeah. You could have been any of the other three guys, though.
Yeah. I think I would, having, you know, read all the books, I think I would have been John Densmore, who was the guy that literally got a skin rash from his stress of dealing with Jim Morrison.
And, you know, just so we have closure on the whole thing, I think.
Or achieve closure, and Steven Spielberg could make a movie of this.
That's perfect, too. But I think Morrison was the Trump of his age, in a sense, where he just was spouting fucking nonsense, and people loved him because was, you know what they love about Trump? Trump is sort of like a rebel, believe it or not. He's not at all.
Of course not, yeah.
He's not at all, but he's like, you know, he's like, let me tell you what I do. And Morrison was doing the same
thing. Well, that's like John Lennon singing Imagine No Possessions from his country estate.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah, and you know, Yoko was a great businesswoman, I've come to learn.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a great Elvis Costello song, The Other Side of Summer, from the album Mighty Like a Rose. He has a line, was it a millionaire who said, imagine no possessions? The rabid rebel dogs ransacked the shampoo shop.
That is unbelievable.
Man. What album is that from?
That's Mighty Like a Rose. It came out summer of 91, I believe, actually. It was when he had the long hair and the beard.
Oh, yeah.
That's who I would be were I a rock star. I would have.
Elvis.
Kind of.
I'd be Van
clever
Morrison.
Clever and funny. Stephen Wright loves Van Morrison.
I love him, too.
Yeah.
He does, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I love his maroon jumpsuit he wore in The Last Waltz.
Oh.
Remember?
Last Waltz may be my favorite. It's got to be. You think that best music documentary, Last Waltz?
Yeah, probably.
I put it up there.
Made by Martin Scorsese.
Both true.
In the new version of Last Waltz, what they're doing to keep it consistent with the Martin Scorsese canon, they are digitally removing Rick Danko and replacing him with Leonardo DiCaprio. And he's just going to yell at everybody.
And they just play Gimme Shelter for 90 minutes.
Yeah, and he just yells at people. I'm angry in this scene, so I'm going to yell. What if you played the opposite intention? I don't know what that is.
Danko, an alcoholic, too.
I'm sure all those guys.
Oh, sure.
You know what the Neil Young booger story from The Last Waltz?
He's got a Coke rock in his nose.
The Last Waltz or Woodstock, and I think it's The Last Waltz.
It's The Last Waltz. Because in that Robbie...
did you see the documentary Painting with Light? Because that's what it's from.
No, I just heard about it.
Oh, yeah, there's a brilliant documentary about cinematography.
It's like Robbie's grinding his teeth and pouring sweat.
In Last Waltz. Yeah, he looked coked up.
Yeah, they're all coked. Well, apparently Neil Young has like a giant rock of Coke hanging in his nose. And when the movie came in, they put it up on the big screen, like, we don't know what to do. So at the time, they had to fix it. So they go to the special effects guys, and they're like, can you paint a mat, basically frame by frame, mat out?
To get rid of
but
that?
But it's 1970.
Yeah.
76.
Oh, right.
76.
Yeah. Well,
it was still the 70s, and there was a big generational divide, so they just had to say it was a booger. Because if they said cocaine, they would have gone, fuck you, druggie.
So if I go back and watch, can't find it. You can't find
it. No, it's matted out.
Oh, now they matted it. Yeah,
it's matted out. But I think that's really funny.
It must be weird being coked up.
And they called him up and go, we painted a traveling booger mat.
But you can see Robertson just pouring, playing guitar.
Yeah. Well, as I've said, having done stand up in Boston in the 80s, I saw more cocaine than the Eagles roadies. I remember walking in, and I never did it, so I've never done it. But like, I remember like walking into people going like, "How do your pupils get that small?" I remember walking in like seeing just like Jesus Christ, he looked like an animal in the woods just shine a Klieg light on.
What's the hardest thing you ever tried? Did you ever take a puff of a cigarette?
No.
Good for you.
Oh. That's why
hardest thing you ever tried? Life, man. Life. Boom. Mic drop. Yeah, I think we have to end it on that.
Sure.
There's that great scene in that Twilight Zone episode, Walking Distance. And I feel like, I was like, I don't know if I've quoted this on another podcast, but if I did, I bet it would have been the one I did with you. So if I'm double dipping, I'm sorry. But the Walking Distance, when he goes back to his childhood and he sees the younger version of himself and he tries to like tell him to enjoy everything.
Yeah.
And the father comes up to him and he's like, "You had your summer."
Yeah. You know, you only get one summer.
Yeah, he's like, "You only get one summer. It's his now." I felt that way at Comic-Con.
I totally understand it. That's a brilliant episode. Gig Young was the actor that was told, "You only get one summer."
Yeah. And then he murdered someone.
What? Yeah. In real life?
Yeah.
Who?
Someone. He was a murderer.
Gig Young was a murderer?
Yeah.
Awesome.
I literally looked up an article. The top 50 celebrities you don't know are murderers. He was on there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. There's 50.
I'm going to look up that article.
Yeah.
That might be what
Matthew Broderick, number one.
Yeah.
Ba-da-bump, bump. Yeah.
People still think O.J. Simpson is a murderer. Drives me crazy.
I literally said today at work, "Do you think the Goldman family watches the Naked Gun movies for closure?" It's the closest to justice they'll get.
How come the New York Post never had, "Oh, Norberg"?
The Norberg trials?
Oh, my God. Totally.
I remember being in the parking lot of the Cinerama Dome. It was me and people that are still my friends today. My friends Ken Daly and Rob Cohen, and we're all in the parking lot. And it was the day of the Bronco chase. The slow bike race of the O.J. Simpson trial was going on. And they're like, "We should stay and listen to see how this turns out." And I wanted to see the movie. And I remember standing in the parking lot going, "We have to see Wolf with James Spader and Jack Nicholson. When we come out, OJ will be dead. So let's just, this is more important."
Amazing. Amazing.
We have to see Wolf with Jack Nicholson and James
Spader. You know what's
funny?
I was
Michelle Pfeiffer.
And with the same vehemence, "We must see Monkey Bone." Voiced by John the Past Leguizamo. We must go.
I was out of the country when that happened, because I remember there were two, this is going to make me sound like a total dick, but I was in the gifted class and we got to go on like overseas field trips. And so I was in France.
You know, you're right. You sound like a total.
Yeah. Sorry. So I
overseas with a gifted class.
A gifted class.
I don't know
what, with her overseas trips. While I sat at home watching the OJ trial.
My mom, dude, the second
on telly, having sweets for a sixpence. As many British expressions as you can get in. Watching telly for a sixpence with a sweet
for a fortnight. As soon as I stepped off the plane, my mom says to her only daughter, who just returned from like the first time she went to France or whatever, "What do you think about O.J. Simpson?" First word. I don't know.
How is France?
I'm like, "He's the dude from the Naked Gun movies?" Like, "I don't know." And then she was like, "What do you mean?" And told me everything. And I was like, "Yo, nobody in France cares about this," because I had not heard a single word of it. And it was after like it was after all of that had happened. But yeah, my mom's like, "Can you believe it?" And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I am still reeling from Gig Young the murderer.
Yeah.
I've got to dig deep into this.
Yeah, something old and ghastly and you didn't know it.
I know. It's shameful.
Yeah.
Maybe he killed Sal Mineo.
Are you saying his name is Gig, like G-I-G?
Gig. G-I-G, yeah. Gig Young, yeah.
Okay.
Young is in the victim.
What is Gig short for?
I don't know. I think it was just it was also like a Hollywood name. Like,
oh,
it was
right,
like,
okay.
I love the horrible shooting that recently occurred. The guy's real name was like Nestor Lee Turnlip.
Vester.
Yeah.
Vester. It was amazing. Yeah.
And his news name was like Bryce Harlow.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. It was such a cool name. Like,
yeah.
His original name sounded like he was a maitre d' at a restaurant in the Fifth Element.
You know? Exactly. Yeah. Real name, Nestor Lee Boogerman. His news name, Critch Granite.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, he changed his really cool name to a lamer name, and that was the tragedy. No, it was not. That was insane, though, that the Daily News, like, just their front page was just the woman getting shot.
It was.
Was it?
Yeah, they just took stills from that guy's video.
Yeah.
His own video of him shooting them. They put stills of that on the cover.
Yeah. They were sick of the Post being the shitty newspaper.
Wow.
Yeah, like,
we're
going to
take
really
this from you
shocking.
For a day.
I hope people didn't buy it.
It's really shocking.
It's a newspaper, so.
Yeah, no one did buy it. Yeah. Parrots are shitting on the floor to avoid shitting on
But that's
newspaper.
An amazing thing. Like, when people get mad about journalists and things like that, I'm like, their world is dying. And even like when people are upset about bloggers, like in the same way that we have to come up with new material every day, so do they.
Uh-huh. Totally. So, yeah.
When you're like, they just pulled that out of nothing. I'm like, yeah, because they had to.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They don't want to follow Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
a lot of more freelancers who only get paid per story they write. So they've got to just pump shit out.
Yeah. It was always like that. You know, it was like that in the 50s. It was like, you know,
that's the OJ trial.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I have found as I've tuned out, it's great when your life takes over. You kind of glance at it. And
so even the primaries, I'm like, I'll wait till they pick someone.
Yeah. We're going to have a strong, vigorous debate before Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton go at it.
Yeah. This is just...
I want you to be right.
Oh, I'm right. Remember, 8 years ago, everybody thought, Sarah Palin is just as qualified as Barack Obama. There are laws of political gravity that exert themselves.
I just wish the
first woman president didn't feel like a default setting.
Yes, I understand.
Like, it's going to be like, we're the first woman, and everyone's going to be like, same old shit.
I mean, it'll be the first woman or the third Bush.
Yeah.
Or the second Clinton and the third Bush. It's all, Barry Crimmins had the best joke about the election. The big problem with this election is somebody's going to win.
That's right.
How old were you when you got into comic books?
Really in like 8 or 9, and it was a specific issue, which was the adjectiveless Spider-Man number 23. I'd read some comic books, and the cartoons, you know, were starting to come on. I was 9 when Batman the Animated Series came on, so that really pushed it over the top. But this specific comic book, which was around from that era, was part 6 of 6, and then I went and bought all of the previous issues, and that was the first time I did that, where I had to read the whole story.
Uh-huh.
That was definitely like the ultimate flip switch. But I was reading like Archie stuff, like the Archie Digest, like around 6 or 7. I think those were like, those are like the gateway comic books.
They are gateway comics, and they're oddly instructive. I don't think I'm painting with too broad a brush, where you can basically divide women into Bettys and Veronicas.
I had a joke about that where I was like, Betty in the streets, Veronica in the sheets.
Yeah, and then you end up...
That's exactly true.
And then you end up fucking Ethel anyway. But you'd rather fucking Ethel than a Midge. Because what's Midge? She's nothing.
Poor Midge.
No one likes Midge. She's literally just property. Stay away from Midge.
Did you ever see, I'm sure you have, The Simpsons, where it just starts with the Archie gang throwing...
That is my favorite moment.
Stay
it's from
Riverdale, Simpson!
No, it's Sideshow Bob Roberts, and it is Moose, and he goes, stay out of Riverdale, and he throws him out, and then there's a callback to it later when Homer's in the car, and he's reading an Archie magazine, he just goes, lousy Riverdale punks. It's the same episode where Bart has to go back a few grades, and he's like, I got dibs on the Flintstone phone. And it just goes, yabba dabba doo, I like talking to you. Yeah. But see, even though I know all that, there's someone who knows way more.
Yes, yes.
They would have been Sideshow Bob Roberts, a 9FZ3.
Yeah. Right. Well, I work there, and I don't know all that. I think I was just warned off doing a joke in that one.
Yeah. And now
we did that before.
Now the internet's to the point where I bet they don't even know their own production numbers.
I did Allison Allie Gertz's Simpsons podcast, And I said that I was talking about the first episode that I wrote called Homer the Moe. And I said, I think it's not my favorite episode that I wrote, but it's the funniest episode that I wrote. And then some guy like gave me shit for liking an episode from season 13.
Yeah.
Like, you can't like any episodes after season 10. Like, well, I wrote it.
Yeah. Like,
it's about my father, and I do like it, so fuck right. you.
And to,
yeah, no shit.
To quote The Simpsons, lady, it's putting my kids through college.
Exactly. Yeah. My kids are sleeping right now in the house that The Simpsons bought. And here's weird Simpsons trivia. The Simpsons Walking Dead connection, Greg Nicotero, the producer and director and makeup supervisor on The Walking Dead, is the doorman of M when Mo turns Moe's into M, the upscale bar. Greg is the doorman.
Wow.
It's just been my friend for forever. And like, he wasn't even famous then. He was just my friend who was a makeup effects guy.
You were like, I'm going to do you solid?
Yeah, I was like, yeah, you want to be in The Simpsons? I said, yeah. So I just got a picture. I said, make that guy the doorman.
That's amazing.
what was your favorite Treehouse of Horror changing of your name?
I think I always did the same one, which was just G-H-O, Ghoul.
Dana Ghoul.
Yeah, that was kind of a layup. And my favorite Treehouse of Horror, I think, was maybe the third or fourth one, I think, when the Mr. Burns Dracula one. The Mr. Burns is Coppola's Dracula one.
That's the fourth one in season five. My favorite is five, which is in season six, but Time and Punishment, the time travel one. That specific segment is my favorite thing ever.
Actually, I take that back. From season eight, the Omega Man parody is great because it's such a beautifully obscure thing. And the one that made me laugh that I worked on, and it was George Meyer's joke, was our timely torn from today's headlines Day of the Dolphin parody. When the dolphin was beating somebody with a bag of oranges. I just remember George Meyer getting off on the specificity of a dolphin taking the time to put oranges in a bag. that was the best part about working on the show, is that you'd really get into some like really great,
you just pack things in,
just stuff that we liked. there's just stuff like, why are you doing Orson Welles' War of the Worlds broadcast episode? Not because I love it, that's why. Because I know everything about it, because I was in ninth grade and I wasn't cool, so I was listening to my War of the Worlds radio broadcast record. That's why. It's what you're into.
Yeah.
Whatever you're into. As Sammy Davis Jr. said, congratulations on doing your thing.
Other podcasts reach for the sky. Dana Goldbound.
We barely try.
This has been the Dana Gould Hour, brought to you by The Internet. Music by Andy Paley, with Jake Posner behind the board. Produced by Jeff Fox. Graphic design and web production by Spencer Hunt and Segan Friend. Sound editing and post-production by Jalinda Palmer and Joe Napolitano.
Hey, if you like the show, why don't you drop us a line at show@danagould.com. Tom Kenny speaking.
You know you have to fight for your right to party.